Good evening. I'll call the meeting to order. Welcome to tonight's council meeting on Monday the 20th of October 2025. My name is Paula Reid, Mayor of Kingborough. It's my pleasure to welcome people to tonight's meeting and particularly to the people we have in the public gallery this evening. The time being 5:30pm, I now officially declare the meeting open. Council now operates under the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations of 2025. Under these, I am required to advise you that A, an audio or audiovisual recording is being made of the meeting. All persons attending the meeting are to be respectful of and considerate towards other persons attending the meeting, and language and conduct of the meeting that could be perceived as offensive, defamatory or threatening to a person attending the meeting or listening to the recording is not acceptable. The audio recording of council meetings is made publicly available on our website and meetings are live streamed on YouTube. Can I also ask that if you do have a mobile phone with you that it's switched off to silent or to off completely, please, because it does disrupt the flow of the meeting. I now ask staff to confirm that the audio recording has started. Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. The attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reid, Deputy Mayor Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson, and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the CEO, Mr. Stewart, Director of People and Finance, Mr. Spinks, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr. Spee, Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Ms. Shakuti, Communications Lead, Ms. Adams, Communications Officer, Mr. Heather, our Executive Assistant, Mrs. Morton, and our Consultant Planner, Ms. Heckelman. We don't have any apologies this evening. We're now on page one, confirmation of minutes, that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting No. 17, held on the 6th of October 2025, be confirmed as a true record. We had a workshop on the 13th of October in relation to a notice of motion about the draft Kimberley Local Provisions Schedule. We are now at page two, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare? Councillor Fox. Oh, sorry. Beg your pardon. Sorry. Yes, looking for a mover of the minutes. Councillor Fox and seconded by the Deputy Mayor. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Workshops held since the last council meeting. We had the one, as I mentioned, in relation to the draft local provisions schedule. Does any councillor have an interest? No, thank you. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No, thank you. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice? Can I just give a preamble and just remind members who are here with us today that there are guidelines around the way that questions are to be asked. And also, the questions cannot relate to an item that is listed on tonight's agenda. So if you would like to ask a question, please come to the microphone and we will need your name and your suburb, thank you, before you commence. A reminder, you have up to three questions per person and questions are not to be debated, nor to have a long preamble.
I have a question without notice, Mayor, and that is...
Sorry, so Julian Punch
is my name.
Yep, thank you.
I'm a ratepayer and I live at 2001 Huon Road, Longley, Tasmania 7150. We have 75 acres of land that is a corridor, an important corridor for flora and fauna between Kingborough and the Huon Valley. And... That is important in terms of the more friendly, environmental sensitive land in the Huon Valley. We have been very concerned about the amount of concrete that's been poured in terms of the playground here. And I have raised this before, but I've received no answer. My question is very simple, and that is that the council stops the pouring of poison on the road roads in our area and in the whole of the municipality. It's a useless practice in terms of killing the grass and the weeds on the road verges, because it simply dries out and then becomes a problem. We have every year we have to apply for permission to stop the poison on our land in terms of the importance of our land in the municipality.
So, and can I just be clear? So your question is in relation to roadside spraying of weeds, is that correct?
Yeah.
And so what could you just sort of help me out with what your question specifically is?
I started to do that, Mayor.
Sorry, okay.
In the sense that we're asking specifically, and we've asked 12 months ago at a AGM, that council stops pouring the poison on the road verges in the municipality. One of the things that in Tasmania we have to apply every year, and we have to manage the roadway verge ourselves because we're asking for the poison to be stopped. And that is against the Anti-Discrimination Act, where people are treated, one area of people are treated differently to the other people. It's a form of discrimination. So we're asking council to stop the practice.
Thank you. I will ask the CEO. Thank you.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. So council manages weed control around the side of the roads that we look after, so that it does involve using various sprays. You talked about the register that we have for people who don't want to have sprays used on their property, so that is a way that people can let council know and we will not spray those areas. My understanding is we have now don't require that to be done every year, so once someone is on that register, you're then on that register and it doesn't require an annual renewal of that.
Our concern is that we have to manage the road verge, and the difficulty is that there's so many areas of insects that are now subject nationally to being threatened species, particularly frogs, and we're looking at that importantly. What happens is, unfortunately, on our land, the weeds and the spray from the opposite side of the road move under a council channel from the other side of the road to ours.
The CEO.
Through you, Mayor. I'm not sure exactly what the question is there. I guess to address the use of products, so council, I guess, takes best practice advice about what products we should be using in the control of the weeds at the side of the road. Obviously, we want to also make sure that we're protecting biodiversity in terms of insects and frogs, as you rightly mentioned. In regard to the effect that has between properties, we'll take that on notice and have a look at that. I'll take some advice from the team, but I'm quite sure that our team are very conscious about trying to manage the application of the spray so that it targets the areas that we're attempting to control the weeds, and also endeavours to not have cast-off spray that reaches other undesired areas. So we will have a look at that for you.
Thank you. Do you have a third question?
I've also included the vulnerability of the insects nationally in terms of the number of insects that are going out of that are a threatened species, particularly frogs. And we're very conscious of that because flora and fauna is our responsibility. We're under a covenant, and we're really conscious of the insects being a very important part of the flora and fauna.
Thank you, Mr. Punch. Are there any further questions? If you do have a question, please come to the microphone.
Good afternoon. My name's Nick Barter from NECA. As a volunteer firefighter, I'm aware of some of the vulnerable people in my neighbourhood. And one of my neighbours who has been impacted by the rezoning with the LCZ, I happen to be aware that they have a significant brain injury. And my question relates to the stakeholder consultation and engagement plan for the rezoning. I would like to know, how did the SCEP consider and address the accessibility needs for the vulnerable in our community, including those with mental impairment or disadvantaged by literacy or lack of access to technology?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. Council undertook an approach to be, I suppose, as broad as we could in terms of engagement methods available to us. So through the process, acknowledged there was a lot of information provided through, I suppose, website, and that would require technology. We also undertook community information sessions so that people could attend in person to ask about and have their proposed zoning explained to them. The other, and I think importantly, mechanism that we used was one-on-one appointments. So our senior strategic planner was available most days throughout exhibition and beyond. To have either phone conversations, a one-on-one appointment, or a Teams meeting if you had technology available to you to do that.
So, just for clarity, did your SCEP have a section considering and addressing the needs, specifically the accessibility needs of this patient?
Sorry, I'm just swapping.
Oh, Ms. Shakuti, sorry.
Through you, Mayor. I'll have to take that one on notice. I'm not aware of the specifics of whether that was in place.
I had a question last week, and my second question is in response to that. In 9.6, and for clarity, my last name is spelled B-A-R-T-A.
Yes, our apologies for that. I know that Mrs. Morton has corrected that in the online statement. Version. It's all right. My name gets spelt wrongly all the time, I can assure you.
Your last paragraph states that there'll be a review of the LCZ. I would just like some I would like some confirmation. Will that include all LCZ zones, including places in NECA? And if so, how do we engage with that process?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor. So this, in some ways, relates to the subject of the notice of motion that will be coming to Council later this evening. But I guess if you would like assurance about the coverage of that, I suggest reading the Direction 69 from the Tasmanian Planning Commission. So it provides Council with the opportunity to review the application of the Landscape Conservation Zone across the local provision schedule that we have submitted. And that was largely due to the withdrawal of the PPZ, or the fact that the PPZ was not adopted at this time by the Tasmanian Planning Commission. So it does provide us the opportunity to review. It's safe to say we will look at the application of LCZ in its totality. The process is still to be determined about what that exactly looks like. I would suggest that it probably will not likely engage with individual property owners through that process. It'll be a review of the planning principles that underlie the application of zones under the local provision schedule, and again, subject to the notice of motion tonight, we'll find out exactly how we do that.
And, you know, I'm not an expert on these things, but my understanding is that on the schedule that was provided, there's no definition for landscape values, but it's often used as a justification for decisions being made. Can you please describe how you provide a consistent and process of making judgments on what zone will be applied to or recommended to be applied to one way or another in a transparent way where people may be able to provide information about their own property and respond to the information you're assessing against? I'm not sure what the selection criteria are for these things.
Do you want to take that? Ms. Chakoudi.
Through you, Mayor, if I'm able to clarify your question, is your question what are the criteria we are looking at to determine landscape values, or the criteria generally for landscape conservation zone to be applied?
I guess, yes, in the provision schedule, there's no definition for landscape values, and it makes it unclear, or it seems to lack transparency for us to appreciate how you're making decisions. And I'm just wondering, if is there a list that's available on the assessment criteria that you consider so we can look at our own land and say, well, these are the things that council was interested in when they were making decisions and things like that?
Ms. Chakoudi.
Through you, Mayor. Not that I'm aware of that there is a specific definition. Sorry, is everybody able to hear me?
It's going in and out.
So it is also quite area specific, and depending on the land, and I know that doesn't assist you in answering your question. Some of the values, for example, would be the particular natural values on that land that are known to be present. Others will be amenity from other viewpoints in terms of looking at the land from, I suppose, viewpoints from around and the different perspectives, and I suppose the value that adds to the overall landscape. This is something perhaps that our review as a result of Direction 69 can perhaps provide some more clarification on to assist landowners in thinking about their land in terms of the proposed zoning as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you.
My name's Tamir, and I'm from Manuka Road, Oyster Cove. So, Mayor, this one is specifically for you. Are you aware that the 35F report is a living document?
Is a living document.
Yeah, so it can be changed at any time by council whilst the TPC hearings process is underway, and therefore the council could choose to take corrective action and address the community's concerns about the proposed LCZ zoning application.
Yep. That is correct. However, it cannot be withdrawn, but we are now having the opportunity through Direction 69 to be able to make changes with the appropriate advice, and I think we're starting to touch on the notice of motion as to how that would proceed going forward.
So were you specifically aware that it was a living document?
Yes, I am aware that it's a living document.
Thank you. So another one for you, Mary. An article in Kimberley Council's website on the 16th of October and in today's Mercury, you stated there is a misinformation in the community regarding how LCZ may be impacting people's ability to use their land and whether the application is appropriate. Can you please tell me what that misinformation is?
So some of the things that people have continued to say, despite trying to correct some of those assertions. It's things like if the a house burns down and it is in the LCZ zone, that it cannot be rebuilt. That is a that is a myth. So if it was a lawfully established building, then the rights to rebuild it are protected in the event of a fire or a disaster. I've also had people say to me that land clearing for bushfire mitigation is not permitted under the LCZ. And we've all been around this table many times when that question has been asked, and the response is that bushfire mitigation provisions continue to apply regardless of zoning. So there is a lot of misinformation that is floating around about the implications of LCZ, and we know there are a lot of concerns about it, but please, we just need to make sure that the factual information is getting out there, because we don't want scaremongering. And I would be rightly concerned if I was told, well, you're going to go into this zone, but you can't rebuild if your house burns down. I'd be like, well, what do you mean? Then I've got to go and live on a tent, in a tent. Well, no. So there are things that have been items of misinformation, unfortunately, that have been perpetuated, and we really want to make sure that the correct information is getting out.
A bushfire, my house burns down, I'm not allowed to rebuild. It's actually at the discretion of the council whether I'm allowed to rebuild. And I think that is the main point of conjecture around everything we are allowed or not allowed to do under LCZ is discretionary. And there's been a lot of unfortunate discretion around that, in terms of right now it's already difficult enough when these items of building are a given that you are allowed to apply for it. You should be able to build a home in a living zone area.
I'm but taking it this LCZ, is another question, please.
No, it's a statement.
Okay,
under
no,
the LCZ.
Sorry. I will need to stop you. If you can turn it into a statement, into a question, that'd be good, because then we can satisfy the meeting procedures. Thank you.
For the CEO. So with regards to the LPS process, is there a delegation of authority to the planning department at the moment?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor. So yes, under the council delegations, which can be found on the council website, there is a delegation around sections 30-35 of the of LUPA, which is the Land Use and Planning Act.
Have there been any changes to that delegation of authority?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Please come forward.
Mayor, are you aware that the function of the TPC is to review representations?
Yes.
It doesn't review the draft LPS from the beginning to the end and does not correct zoning unless there is a representation. So its function is to consider representations only. So where does this leave the majority of property owners in Kingborough targeted with LCZ who didn't know about the zoning and therefore do not have a representation? There is no mechanism to fix the zoning for these people unless the planning authority directs the planners or the consultant, depending on what happens with the motion, to do so.
Obviously, what the Tasmanian Planning Commission might do moving forward is entirely up to them, and we do have a notice of motion tonight that we are considering that will, you know, possibly provide an alternative course of action for our response to Section 69. We have followed the statutory procedures that have been outlined in the under the Act. And in fact, we did go above and beyond the consultation that was required. And could I just remind, I appreciate that you may not agree with what statements that are made around the table today, but you are here to observe the meeting and not to participate. So I would please ask that you be respectful in listening to the debate and not verbalising any judgments or cheering or applauding. It is not appropriate. I would not like to have to ask people to leave the public gallery. So if I could just remind you of that, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
So, Mayor, are you also aware that in the Huon Valley over 2,200 titles were proposed to go to LCZ? But when the zoning came before the Commission, it was rejected 90% of the time. And that means that in the Huon Valley, the Council got it wrong 90% of the time. The only reason 1,300 properties were zoned LCZ in the Huon was because of the administrative process, which I just touched on regarding the TPC, only responding to representations. So it doesn't necessarily mean that the zoning was correct in the Huon Valley. It just means that people didn't have the opportunity to raise a representation, therefore it went through. So why, knowing this, did Kingborough Council choose to replicate the high application of LCZ, knowing that it was likely to be rejected?
Well, I'm not going to cast any prediction on what the TPC will do. I have reached out to the Mayor of Huon Valley to talk about the process that they have been through. I haven't been able to have that conversation as yet. As for the remainder of the question, the CEO, perhaps.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. So as part of the creation of the draft LPS, Council had a number of meetings with the TPC, the called pre-lodgement meetings, and so through that process our staff engaged with the TPC on, I guess, what appropriate zoning was as a starting point to go out for public engagement. I do need to reinforce that as the starting point. The hearings process, the intent is to get feedback from our community, to hear from our community and be able to listen and understand and incorporate those representations that are received into the 35F report that is presented to the Planning Commission. From there, as you rightly point out, the process goes through hearings. The Commission then listen to the representatives, listening to the representatives of the Planning Authority, and then make decisions based on that. They don't have to follow either of those two sides. They can make a third decision. It's completely up to them about how they make those calls. So that's the sort of process we go through as part of the hearings process. And what it endeavours to do is find what the best planning zone application is at the end of it. Council acknowledges that there's a number of people that have been frustrated by the process and have felt like they have risk at their properties. As the Mayor points out, some of that is potentially not necessarily based on actual evidence, but we also acknowledge that there is probably more another look that we can do at the application of the LCZ, and that's what we will be doing through the Direction 69 that we have. So it's to be able to re-look at that, test it against good planning principles, which are outlined in various strategic documents, such as through LUPA and through the Regional Land Use Strategy. Alongside that is obviously utilising the inputs that we've had so far through the process, whether that be through the hearings and from representations. So there's a number of those things that will come together in that relook at the application of the landscape conservation zone across the municipal area.
At a last, it's not really a question, but it is a question because there's a
please
lot
make of it a question.
There's a lot of
question
focus
time.
Well, I'll try and word it as a question for you because there's a lot of focus, all of us, on LCZ. But the reality, from what I'm seeing and reading from people, is LCZ is part of the problem. So there are concerns from other members of the community who have been given other zones, such as rural living, etc. And with the combination of the overlays and SAPs and all of the other things that we can discuss, I guess the question is, are we actually going to use this as an opportunity to look at all of it or just LCZ? Because there is a bigger concern in the community with regards to the entirety of the LPS.
I can't preempt what the decision will be this evening, and we will have that debate very shortly. Thank you. Further questions?
Joel Hodson, Middleton. This is a bit of a follow-on, and I don't think it's misinformation, so forgive me if it is. Since Crown Road reserves are not roads maintained by a road authority, and as the State Planning Office has confirmed, cannot give right of carriageway, regardless of whether a property owner has a current licence, a lease over that Crown Road reserve, can Council give a total figure of properties that currently have the ability to build under the interim planning scheme but will lose that ability based on sections 20.4.3, 21.4.3 and 22.4.3 of the state planning provisions?
Ms Shakuti, I suspect we'll need to take that on notice.
Yes, we will. Thank you.
A follow-up question to last meeting, my questions on notice regarding roads maintained by council. It's agenda item 9.4. I was a bit bemused when I was trying to read that, how that was transcribed from my questions. I went back over the YouTube recording and I don't know how it's come out like that. So yes, I'm aware that Majors Road is partly owned by council, that section of road. I've lived at my property for 9 years and this road has not been maintained once. It's a key road to get access to Majors Hill. So what liability does council have for not maintaining this road or any other road in council that is maintained by you in the event of a bushfire or something, a situation like that? Say I drive up there and drive off the road because the road's not maintained. A follow-up for this is that I do have an email dated 2022 from Council Service Request Portal asking Council to maintain this road, and there was no follow-up on it. Majors Road, Middleton, has not had any work done for the last 5 years and is currently four-wheel drive access only, landslides in at least two spots, rubbish dumped on the bridge. I went up there yesterday. It's still in a very poor shape. Luckily, it was dry. I got up there in two-wheel drive, but...
CEO.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. So we did answer the question on notice last time, which stated that Majors Road is partly owned by council, and we have a responsibility to maintain that small portion. As it relates to the rest of the road, I don't believe council has any obligation to maintain that as a privately owned road. In regard to the correspondence that you received or sent through in 2022, I'm not aware of that. If you would like to forward that through, we'd happily have a look at it and provide a formal response to you. Through you, Mayor, without expressing a legal opinion, my personal understanding is we would not have any liability for the remainder of that road. Sorry?
The council-owned portion that's not being maintained.
So council, I don't know the details about how often it's been maintained and the time period you referenced, so I can find that out. So yes, we do have surface levels that we would seek to maintain on that portion of council-owned road, and I can find out how often we've done that and look at getting a review of the state of that piece of road that we do own. Beyond that, we have no liability.
Maintained. Yep.
Through you, Mayor. If you send an email through to KC at Canberra, the email address, we'll make sure that we get a response to you.
Thank you. Do you have a last question?
So last council meeting, during the discussions on the fire risk abatement policy, identified that planning permits would not be required for abatement notices. Will this be reflected with the removal of section 5.6 of the policy? And for clarity, will there be no costs incurred to landholders through the biodiversity offset policy or other policies regarding abatement notices, except those found within section 5.5?
Mr. Smee? No? Maybe? Mr. Smee?
Through you, Mayor, Council endorsed the policy last meeting, so until it's up for review again, unless there's a reason to review it, no, it's not intended to change the policy that Council's just endorsed 2 weeks ago.
Further questions? Please come forward.
I've not been aware of the rezoning until recently via a Facebook site. You've mentioned misinformation, and we've mentioned about lack of information, and you can, I know you didn't approve of, but you heard the response to some things like council's views are discretionary. What my question is that when a lot of answers are given, so for example, question 9.6 in the agenda and 9.8, when the answer is, oh, well, this is context specific, or we follow in accordance with section A8 of some zone. Now, to me, I'm not as learned as you in these particular things, that doesn't really have a great deal of meaning to me. And from what I can gather from my colleagues here, it doesn't have a lot of meaning to them as well. So in other words, when you answer a question and say, well, there are reasons and there is a context to this, and if you go to a particular document, that doesn't say anything to me at all. Especially when you say that everything you have, say your house, your land, everything else, if it is to be rebuilt, it's discretionary. Well, again, that doesn't really mean anything. I mean, maybe it will, maybe it won't. It's at council's discretion. In other words, maybe they will and maybe they won't. So my question is, how is council going to put things into plain English that people like myself can understand and follow what are fundamentally life-changing decisions made by council?
I appreciate order. I appreciate your quest for plain English, because I have that myself, that I am constantly saying in the information that we provide that we need to be able to articulate it in as clearly as possible, so the language is as accessible as it can be to everyone in the community. Unfortunately, particularly when it comes to planning, it is very technical in nature, and so we do have to reference particular acts and things like that, so that it's obvious that there is a strategic link to the things that we are doing. And so if we were not to include those links, then I suspect we would probably be criticised as well for not providing that evidence. So we're in a bit of a bind there, but certainly I appreciate your comments about plain English. If I can just add also, in relation to discretionary, in 2023-24, 92% of development applications that were received by Kingborough Council were discretionary, and only two of those out of the 92% were refused, so 0.6%. So I think that's, when we talk about, there is a lot of myth around discretionary, so please just understand that a lot of them do come, and they overwhelmingly do get approved.
Council, are you saying council are going to try and improve the communication with the general public or not?
We always strive to use plain English, and that is something that the CEO will attest to, that I have tried to take up with some vigour so that we can get the messages through. And it is disappointing that we're not being able to get those messages through in the clearest way that we possibly can. And I acknowledged at the last meeting that in hindsight we should have written directly to everyone. We thought that that because everybody receives rate notices and that they read their rates notices, because you have to be able to read it in order to know what is to be paid and when is to be paid. 2 years ago, we put out a pamphlet. I went back and looked at it the other day. We made it in the clearest language we possibly could, and we said, there are changes coming. Other councils have been through this. It's now going to be our turn. You need to, this may affect you. This is the link. You can sign up to a mailing list and get information, and I think 1,000 people did do that. But we could have done better, and we will strive. We will continue to strive to do better. Any further questions?
Hi, my name is Natalie Kingston. I'm from Blackmans Bay. My questions are around the Mercury article that was very recent and some statements from the HIA and some quite concerning thoughts around that. So my first question is around the need for housing and whether the Kingborough Council is having an input into the Stirless and advising or working with the TPC around anything to do with the Stirless and increasing potentially that to do with housing for the future needs of our community.
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, we are actively involved in providing input into Stralis. The way in which we advocate for, I suppose, additional housing is through primarily expansion of the urban growth boundary, and we have had discussions around where that could be and what it could look like and the appropriate zoning for that. There has also been a recent application to amend the urban growth boundary that we supported an applicant to make, which was in Margate, which would allow for some additional housing in an, I suppose, the form of an estate to be built. So yes, we are definitely doing that.
I wanted some more information. Would it be worth my while making a time to come and speak to you about how I might get support for amendment of that Stralis or whatever it's called?
It would be probably coming... Oh, sorry. Yes. Through you, Mayor. It would be coming and talking with our strategic planner who could give you some background on Stralis. That's not something we can amend. That's a state... led a strategy, but we certainly can have input into that, but we can also talk through what application would be to amend the current planning scheme as well. To note, that is a fairly onerous process, but it would be worth coming and having a chat to understand further.
So the example you gave from Margate, that exact thing happened, so I could assume that there is possibility and it might be worth my while?
There is possibility. It is still in the process at the moment. Yeah.
One further question in relation to the same article. It states the Kingborough Council, this is the HIA Mercury article, the council says it is always reviewing processes to ensure they are efficient. With regard to housing and construction, what current processes are being reviewed and what is the priority?
CEO?
Through you, Mayor. So we have a business improvement program that we have undertaken this year, and we have intent to get further into that. If I'm really honest, the process that we're in regard to the LPS is consuming the majority of our internal resource that we have available to be looking at these types of things. So, we have the intent to be looking at some elements of how we work with developers. Additionally, we want to be looking more at, in the long term, like you were mentioning in your previous question about the strategic land use planning across our municipal area, to make sure that we've got the right sort of development occurring in the right area, whether that's housing, whether that be commercial, whether that be industrial. Make sure that we've got the plan for the future, and that way we can be working with industry to make sure that we're delivering the outcomes that are going to increase employment opportunities, increase the ability to, for people to live, work and play within the same community, those types of things that we know are so important to livability. So that is work that we strongly intend to do. However, we need to get through this process first so that we can free up the capacity to be able to do that work that we know is so important for our community.
So in summary, that was a generic statement, there is an intention, there is nothing at the moment in that space. The LPS is the current priority.
Yeah, correct. So the LPS is our current priority in that space.
And my last question is related to the LPS, I think. Has the council undertaken a professional landscape values assessment, given there has been so much feedback about what it means? Have they engaged somebody to undertake that assessment to date? And or will they potentially, or is that something that might may be covered later?
Ms. Shaguti.
Through you, Mayor, and I'm a little vague on and unsure of the accuracy of my response. My understanding is that this work was commenced but has not been progressed due to a resourcing and other reasons. And there were some guidelines in terms of how those values translate from our current planning scheme to this one, and we acknowledge that further work needs to be done, and that is important, and it will be looked at as a priority as soon as possible.
Any further questions? If so, please come forward, otherwise we will move on.
Hi, Owen Marshall, Tinderbox. My first question is to you, Mayor. You mentioned that there's been, I think you said, 90-something discretionary applications made and 0.6% were approved. 0.6% were rejected.
0.2%.
But I would guess that none of those are under the LCZ.
No, and because so, the LCZ doesn't currently exist.
Indeed. Yeah. So we can't really assess whether a discretionary approval, a discretionary application made under the LCZ is going to get approved or not. Based on those numbers, they don't really tell us anything.
Well, I think that there has been a perception that anything that's discretionary potentially is going to be refused is what is the sentiment that I'm hearing from people in the community. But the statistics for discretionary applications have shown otherwise to date. Yes, it's not in the LCZ because it currently doesn't exist. I don't have the LCZ currently does exist around the state, and I don't have we don't have the figures as to what percentage of their discretionary applications under that have been approved or not. But I don't know whether, Ms. Shaguti, you'd like to add anything to that?
Through you, Mayor. I think the other, and you're correct, that information is provided just for context around, you know, discretionary applications are very common to be received by the planning department, and we receive them for all sorts of reasons. So even permitted uses in many zones, and then maybe a code will apply to that piece of land and make that a discretionary application. So they are very common. And depending on what is being proposed, the rules of the zone and the codes that apply is how we'll assess it on its merit. I don't foresee that meeting the requirements of LCZ, and again, you know, acknowledgement that it's yet to come into force, will be any more difficult than other discretionary applications. At times there's a number of discretions that will apply in an application for various parts of the zone requirements and code requirements. So I don't think that really helps answer your question, but it's context in terms of what we receive very commonly, and that we are able to assess it and where the right information is provided, and the application demonstrates compliance, it will be approved.
sorry.
I guess my second question then is the thing that I think worries me the most about LCZ, it's certainly not the only thing, but it's the biggest thing, is the right to build a house becomes discretionary and the right to potentially rebuild a house becomes discretionary. Now, I may have misunderstood that because of what you said earlier, Mayor, so I just wanted to check. If my house does burn down through a bushfire and I'm not able to rebuild for 5 or 10 or 20 years, do I still have the absolute right to rebuild?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. And I'll partially take this on notice to provide a response to ensure it's absolutely accurate. My understanding is that for all zones, your right to rebuild after your house is lost due to a natural disaster, whether it's fire or flood, is protected under another section of LUPA. It is not discretionary. As long as the application is for the dwelling that was, I suppose, the plans are for the dwelling that previously exists or very similar to. So if you're proposing something substantially different or on a substantially different part of the land, then it may require an application. Otherwise, it is protected and it is not discretionary.
There is a time limit.
You have to be able to demonstrate continued use of that land for the type of use that the dwelling was, so residential. That applies to all zones, not just LCZ. My understanding is demonstrating that is not hard, and it's a low threshold to demonstrate continued use. And that it won't expire and that you would then be allowed to rebuild post that time.
I think it would be good to get more information on that because, of course, in my current zoning, I have a right to build. It's not discretionary, so it does make a difference.
So Ms. Shakuti indicated that we'll provide some further detail in writing in the next agenda.
And so my last question is just about the information that was provided to us as residents, because I think, like many people here, I first found out about this not through a letter from council, but from a letter from the Elcocks, and I was very grateful to receive that, and my heartfelt thanks go out to them because nobody else got in touch with us. And I know that there was a leaflet put in with our rates notice, and I went back and found it. It's a very pastel-coloured leaflet. It tells us that there's a new zoning coming in. I never thought that that would encompass a change from a zoning where I have a right to build a house to one where it's only discretionary, where if I want to build a shed, I'm not going to be able to build a shed. It's, to my mind, it just seems extraordinary that we wouldn't get more information from the council. And I was wondering, that seemed to have been sent out before any decisions had been made about the rezoning. So when decisions were made, did you or the council think that, well, maybe we should actually get in touch with the residents? Maybe we should actually make sure that they understand the implications of what's about to happen?
So we advertised very, very widely in terms of the sessions that were being held, and that leaflet was a precursor to the formal start of the process. Under the articulated process from the state government, we didn't need to give any warning or anything like that. We have done more than other councils in terms of the process. I already indicated earlier in my answer to a question that ideally we should have written directly to owners. I recall the discussion at the time, there were some concerns that if we wrote and said, well, you're currently zoned this and you might go into this zone, that because it was a moving feast, that some of that could change, and then we've written and given the wrong information. And so that's why it was the approach that was taken at the time. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. But we did make sure that once we were in the TPC, or once we were told by the TPC that we could commence the 60-day consultation period, that that was held in various parts of the municipality, and we did, and I don't have the list here with me at the moment, but there was a very extensive campaign that we undertook above the statutory requirements to try and draw attention to this for as many people as we can. And, you know, I said at the last meeting, I'm sorry that we didn't reach everyone, but... you know, we are now at this stage of the process. We can't go back and change that. And we are seeking to move forward in a positive way now.
I appreciate that. If there is any chance of keeping us more informed as the process progresses, maybe through email, that would be very much appreciated.
So there is a mailing list that we did. I don't know whether people can still sign up for it, where we were sending out email updates. I'll ask the CEO for some advice.
Yeah, Mayor, thank you. And through you. So your point's a good one in terms of council. And look, it's a challenge that we've got. Not everyone wants to engage with council on a day-to-day basis, and that's fair enough, right? But at the same time, some of the things that we do are really important. So we need to think about the way we communicate and get more effective and at reaching people on the right things when it matters. There's a myriad of things that we do engage in, and so it's being able to try and reach the people that need to hear on the right issue.
I understand that.
Yep. So I guess coming back to your point is we do want to keep a really good engagement through the remainder of this process. So what we'll do is we will, following on this meeting, from this meeting, republish a link through to subscribe, I guess, and then we will be able to use that that email list for subsequent communications. Noting that the process is now a Tasmanian Planning Commission process, not a council one. There may be limited updates that we can provide, but certainly we can look to reactivate that email list, because I understand that people are looking to receive as much information as possible, and that way we can reach you with information that we consider to be as factually based and clear as we can possibly make it. So I'll get the team to look at recirculating a link to sign up for that.
Thanks. You do have my email address.
Great.
Like every ratepayer.
Thank you. Yes, CEO.
Just to address that final point, can I just be clear for everyone in the room? We do have obligations around only using email addresses for the purposes that they were acquired. And when we have acquired people's email addresses for the purposes of sending rates, we're legally limited to only using them for that purpose, which is why we seek to acquire them again for the specific purpose of this. So I can understand the sentiment that we have a lot of people's email addresses, but we do have legal limitation about how we use that to protect you from fundamentally getting spammed.
Spam. Thank you. Further questions, please come forward. Thank you.
Hi, Louisa Darville from Blackmans Bay. Hopefully this is a quick one. Can you confirm that the zone purpose statements and therefore approval processes and the words within them, such as discretionary, have been created by the state government and not council? And is there any ability for council to amend the zone wording or not?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. They were drafted by the state government, and state government, I suppose, owned zones and provisions. We don't have a direct ability to amend that, but we are part of a broader process of consultation being undertaken by the state government about the state planning provisions, in which we provide feedback. And I believe we have provided recommendations specifically around the landscape conservation zone, and that I suppose losing the environmental living zone is limiting for many municipalities in being able to find an appropriate zone for properties, particularly those that are sort of our bush living
land and settings and properties. So yes, we are actively contributing to that, and we will also be using feedback received through representations in this process to inform any of our submissions as well.
Any further questions? Before we move on, we've got quite a substantial planning application we need to consider. Thank you. Just a fun fact, a lot of other councils only have 15 minutes of public question time.
Richard Woolley from Lower Snug. Given this discretion issue, I know that many, many old properties and old houses around the municipality do not have accurate records, given that there was a major flood and a lot of records were lost in Kingston here some time ago. And I think a lot of records of housing or house plans and everything were lost when the Bruny Island Council was overtaken by Kingbra. So if there are no records for your house and your house burns down or gets destroyed by a flood, does that mean that it becomes discretionary and you probably have to go through the due DA process?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor, I don't believe that that would make it discretionary, but can we take that on notice to make sure we provide an accurate response?
Thank you. Any further questions?
Thanks, Mayor. Vince Taskunas, I'm from Tinderbox. Mayor and councillors, if so, I think it's a clear question. Previously, we were on environmental living zone. We've been suggested to be rezoned into landscape conservation zone. I think my question to you, Mayor, is do you accept that, you know, the hundreds of people who are here and the others who have been affected by this change find that difficult, that we're being moved from a zone which is described as living to a zone which is described as conservation? And what we want is somewhere we can live and continue to live like we are now, and it makes sense to us that the rural living zone actually reflects more accurately what we want as ratepayers and residents in our community. So do you accept that that's a fairly simple analysis of what many ratepayers who are assembled here tonight want?
I accept that that for the majority of people in this room tonight and others who are not here, that they do not want to be in LCZ. But I've also had communications, and there were representations put to the process to the TPC to say we want to be in LCZ and we support LCZ because it aligns with our values. So just this morning I received, as did all councillors, an email from a gentleman down in the channel who said I would be concerned about the rural living zone being applied throughout the Oyster Cove area. And he clearly articulated why. So there are many sides to this debate. But I acknowledge the people who are with us this evening. You are, on a whole, people who have concerns about that. There's no argument with that at all.
Just to follow up to Mark's really good question just before about communication. Previously, the CEO said that after we've read Direction 69 that we wouldn't engage with individual landholders. Don't you think that there is actually a really strong case tonight for us to come up with some way of agreeing to use the contact details that you've got and actually engage with everybody who is going to be affected by this, rather than an opt-in sort of mechanism where we have to click a link, which I can assure you most people here probably will, but those who aren't here tonight and still haven't been contacted and don't know what's going on, and there will be hundreds of those, don't you think there is a fairly strong case through you, Mayor, for us to have some sort of agreement whereby as the CEO called it, the good planning principles that are going to be used to review what happens next, and just this will be my last question. This is my second one. Do you think that there is a good opportunity here to make some sort of agreement whereby we can all be communicated directly on this issue rather than have to opt in?
I'll ask the CEO to respond to that, but the privacy law is the privacy law, and we can't sit above that and say, oh, but we have a good case, so we're going to actually breach that. But the CEO.
Yeah, through you, Mayor.
Could I ask that the mobile phone that's ringing be turned off, please? Thank you.
Through you, Mayor. So I really do understand the desire for everyone who is potentially going to be zoned to engage in the process from here. So we are planning on writing to everyone as well. What I was talking about is the process around responding to the Direction 69. At this stage, I think it's the 7th of November, we need to have a response back to the Planning Commission in regard to that direction. Now, in all likelihood, I'm going to be seeking an extension to that timeline, but it gives you a bit of a context for the sort of window we're talking about in the time period that we've got to undertake a piece of work, which is substantial, which we do want to make sure is thorough and is going to deliver really good advice back to the planning authority and through to the Commission. So I guess what I was saying in my earlier response is realistically, I don't believe we're going to engage with every potential LCZ property owner in that process. I acknowledge that's not the position that you might want. In saying that, we do have some imperatives with timing with the TPC to be able to get that response through. That was the context for my response earlier. In regard to general communication, I accept that we can get some information out to you, and we can do that via post, and we can, through that mechanism, potentially look at the getting email addresses so that we can have a much more agile way of connecting and being able to communicate. So there's, a commitment from Council to continue to do better, acknowledging the fact that the number of people in this room is testament to the fact that there's people a bit frustrated with the fact that we haven't done as well as you would like up to this point.
Through you, Mayor, thank you. That's, I'm sure that a lot of people, certainly my neighbours that I've spoken to, will, be pleased to hear you say that on the record tonight. My last question is with respect to that, the 35F document and the Mayor, you said earlier that can't be withdrawn. Let's understand that. But can we... could you commit to ratepayers here tonight that you would, that a real option for us, is that rezoning to LCZ could be changed and replaced with rural living zone for, the thousands of ratepayers that are affected by that? And just by way of context, and I'll finish up, is, for example, Circular Head Council, which... advocates for many years have been suggesting that the whole of the Tarkine should be turned into in its entirety into a national park, and yet that council only has, around about 2% of all of the LCZ titles in the state. And yet, from the advice that I was provided, our council proposal puts us up around 29% of all LCZ titles. So I'm really concerned that we are not going to be able to see on what basis exactly the decisions will be made about, the changes, if any, that are made, and I might be touching on the motion, to what we do with respect to the advice that goes back to the Commission. So yeah. Can you make a commitment tonight that's a real option?
I think that you are touching on the motion, and we do need to have that debate. I'd say sooner rather than later. That debate is due to be had tonight. I am one vote around the table of 10, so I can't commit to what my fellow councillors may or may not want to do. And I'll just remind everyone again that we are very much in the hands of the TPC at this point. So we could go to them and say, we want you to do X, Y and Z, and they say, no, we want to do P, Q and R. They are the independent experts at this stage, and that is their process that we are bound to follow. So, it is very much in their hands at this point.
Do you agree it looks strange that the council that has the TARC line in it has 2% of LCZ, but we have 29%?
I haven't checked the accuracy of those figures, so I don't want to comment on Circular Head. I'm not familiar with the TARC iron situation and what percent and what they... I haven't followed the Circular Head LPS and translation to the statewide planning scheme, so I'm not going to make a comment on something that I'm not familiar with.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Hi, Sue Kerr from Lower Snug. Everybody here is talking about the LCZ, but my concern is actually the rural zone. There's a lot of houses that were in rural living or rural resource that are now going to a rural zone, and I think those people need to be included and notified as well, because the rural zoning is totally discretionary on building.
Did you want to comment on that, Ms. Shakuti?
Through you, Mayor, I think we'll have to take that on notice and assess if additional communication is warranted based on your comments tonight. Thank you.
People in the channel are going into where there's no building unless you've got a farm on it. It's totally discretionary if you can build it all. So, and it seems to be paintbrushed all around Kettering and Woodbridge and Gordon and Middleton. So it's a very large area that's going into this zone as well as the LCZ. And I think these people need to be notified and consulted as well.
Thank you. Take that on board. Any further questions? If not, we will move on.
My name's Tim Harvey, I'm from Snug. I have a question for the Mayor. So, you as a leader of the Kingborough Council and the people in front of us, the employers of us ratepayers, do you believe you have a duty of care for the safety of this community?
Sorry, do I believe I have a
duty of care? You have a duty of care for the safety of this community, Kingborough?
Well, collectively as councillors, we have a duty of care to our community. And I've often said that one of the things that I want to do is lead a caring, connected community and lead with care and with kindness.
Okay, so if the LCZ goes ahead and we have added fire risks on our properties, our physical safety is in danger for our children, our families and our friends, and we also, how can I say this? We have mental health issues because, like everyone in this room, we've worked extremely hard all our lives to have what we have. We've based our lives on it, our retirement on it, our kids' future on it. If we can't continue on that pathway, and we all have to work till we're dead, how are you going to protect our mental health then?
Can I just come back to what we talked about earlier? We did not create... The Kingborough Council did not create the Landscape Conservation Zone or any of the other zones that are contained in the statewide planning provisions. They are a creature of state government. Ms. Shakuti has made that very clear. And I expressed at the last meeting the fact that I understand that this has been extremely stressful for many people in our community. That distresses all of us as councillors. I've had my own mental health battles many years ago. I understand the stresses. I understand that someone's home is their castle and their safe space. And I understand that this is the great unknown, and it is causing stress for those people who don't want to be in some of the zones that they've been translated to. And we're part of the way through that through that at the moment, that opportunity to make representations and to put those cases, and I think it was 1,200 representations all up, if you include the bulk ones, have been made to the TPC, and they are the independent arbiters who will make that decision. And this isn't easy. I understand that.
Thanks, Mayor. I just have one more question. I just want to make sure everyone in front of me understands that if there's nearly 1,600 places being affected, that's probably about 3,000 hardworking people paying rates and taxes, right? Mm-hmm. So most of them have children. If people have hard times, the knock-on effect of that is going to be great. It's going to go through their family, through their friends. But talking about 10,000 people, that's not a safe community. So I just want to know, do you guys understand that could be what comes of this? And that's why we really don't want to see this go ahead.
Thank you. Well, I hope you've made a representation, and I hope you get to go to the TPC. Thank you. All right, are there any further questions? I'm conscious that we do have a very large agenda that we need to move on, and there is a lot of interest, obviously, in one of the items later on in the agenda. So I will find my glasses and we'll keep going. Questions on notice from the public. There were a number of questions on notice. The first one in relation to bushfire risk management from Professor Rowan, with a response from Ms Quinn. One in relation to councillor attendance at TPC public hearings into the LPS from Mr Charles, with a response from the CEO. One in relation to bike parking at the Kingborough Community Hub from Mr Dinellan, with a response from Ms Shakuti. One in relation to road maintenance from Mr Hodson, with a response from Mr Jones. One from Mr Toby Burgess Wilson in relation to fire trials, and a response from Ms Quinn. One in relation to landscape conservation zone from Nick Barter, and a response from Ms Shakuti. Over on page 5, availability of old planning scheme on Council's website, a question from Ms Rogers with a response from Ms Shakuti. A question from Ms Kingston with a response from Ms Shakuti in relation to zones. A question from Ms Rogers with a response from Ms Shakuti in relation to TPC directives. And finally, a question on LCZ from Mr Josh Graham-Evans and a response from Ms Shakuti. Takes us to page 8, questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Two questions from members of the community who have asked me to reach out. The first is around enforcement practices for unauthorised occupancy of private land. I would just like some clarification on what the procedures and enforcement practices are in place when a property owner is suspected of occupying their land without council approval. For example, where someone resides on a property prior to either formal approval or contrary to existing planning permissions.
Ms Shakuti.
Can everybody hear me?
Yeah.
So we will become aware of the potential non-compliance through various means. It may be through a complaint, or it may be that it's come to our attention through an application and review of the material of that. That will be, I suppose, lodged with our compliance area, who will then review the potential non-compliance in accordance with our priority frameworks. So I suppose not all non-compliances are considered equal in terms of some are more serious in nature than others, and we have a framework in the way that we assess and prioritise those. If warranted, we will investigate that, and then the outcomes of that investigation will determine next steps as to whether no further action required if the non-compliance is not substantiated, or if it's serious, we might be looking at a show cause notice. If it's a Building Act non-compliance and it's serious, we might have to issue an order as well.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. As a follow-up, do we engage private investigators or similar to wait outside certain properties to see if they are occupied, or to wait for people to actually turn up?
Ms Shakuti.
Not that I'm aware of. So I don't believe so.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. So councils never actually engage the services of a third-party person in a sort of private investigator capacity to do this?
Ms Chakoudi just said she wasn't aware.
Okay. I've had a number of residents reach out to me in the past week where they suspect that to be happening. Now, I've advised them if they're concerned about people loitering that they should actually call the police. They felt that that these individuals were related to enforcement action to do with unoccupied land. So you've denied that. So I think what I might do based on your testimony is to sort of get them to call the police if they're concerned.
Yep.
Thank you.
Probably not testimony because we're not in a court.
Yeah,
law,
I beg your pardon. Struggling with
the
words.
The response.
Yeah, struggling with words tonight. Second one, if I may. This is actually from a number of individuals. So obviously we are going to be discussing a NOM tonight, of which I partly authored. But members of the community are concerned that if the NOM is successful, that there will be a dramatic slowdown in the process, and some people are actually quite keen for their properties to be moved on and to be zoned. One particular individual is quite keen for the land that he has near Margate to be moved to the new zone, because then he'll be able to subdivide it and offer 19 different properties to the community to occupy, which he estimates will be almost $400,000 per annum in rates and fees to the council. If we do successfully move ahead with the motion and it is successful in its essentially written form, is there capacity for the TPC to go ahead and move individuals who have no complaints to the new zone, to the new planning scheme, I should say, until those who are wanting for their LCZ properties to be reviewed, they're on hold? So can we have one foot in and one foot out? Is that a possibility? Does anyone have an opinion on that?
Ms Chakoudi.
Through you, Mayor. That's a question for the TPC, but my understanding is no, the LPS would have to be finalised, and there wouldn't be sort of partial approval of some zones and all properties and not the others.
Okay. Would you advise me to maybe reach out to the TPC on behalf of these residents for an opinion, or is that something that maybe council should reach out?
CEO?
Through you, Mayor. I would suggest you're entitled to, but it might be an easier process if you send the information through me, and I can do that on behalf of them.
Fantastic. That's all for me.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. A quick question about the Telecommunications Ombudsman report that was released last week. And on the website there for the Telecommunications Ombudsman, you can see their key complaints data tables, which show that in Kingborough, over that last financial year, 24-25, there were 75 complaints made covering mobile, internet and landline issues. For many residents, the ability to connect is seen as a key factor of resilience when it comes to preparing for emergencies such as bushfire and the like. Those issues raised included slow data speed, poor mobile coverage. Now, of course, these are not council issues. Issues like poor mobile coverage are not a council matter. But my question is, what role does council play in helping the providers improve mobile data service, particularly in our regional areas, for example, by working with providers to identify and improve black spots and improve infrastructure provision? What are we doing in that space to reduce the number of complaints?
So the CEO and I met some time ago with the state manager of Telstra, who reached out to us in relation to any identified areas that we'd received complaints from residents to. I think most residents do take their complaints directly to their telecommunications provider. I guess our role in the past has been where they have come to us for council land, where they want to upgrade their telecommunications towers, and they may approach us to site the towers in those locations. So I recall at that particular meeting they had come to us about wanting to upgrade their service around the Leslie Vale area, I think, and there was some land there that they had asked that they wish to put their tower, and then we have to go out to public consultation in relation to that. I did note with some amusement that the very day that telecommunications ombudsman's report hit the paper, that I received, as a Telstra customer, I received a notification on my phone that the Kingborough area network was being upgraded for the next 2 days and that we might have a disruption to our service. So there was something ironic about the timing of that. But I think on a whole, and certainly the message that we received from the gentleman that we met with was, you know, get people to report directly where the black spots are, because if they get enough complaints about particular spots, then they will go and investigate what they can do to improve them. So the direct response to the provider is, I think, for most people, the most appropriate.
Thank you.
Any further questions from councillors? No, if not, we'll move to questions on notice and councillors. On page 8, at the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice and councillors. Open session of council now adjourns, and the planning authority commences at 6:56 p.m. We're on page 9, officers' reports to planning authority. We're considering DA 2025-23, development application for retirement village consisting of 44 independent living units, communal building and associated works, and boundary adjustment of two road lots and lot 555 Alfred Gardens and 67 Village Drive Kingston and two other road lots, with a recommendation on page 41. And I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. This is an extensive report. I do thank the author for bringing us all of the information. I note that a consultant planner was used for this application. I just have a question at that point. Is that something that we typically do, bring in consultant planners?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. There may be various reasons why we utilise consultant planners. In this instance, it's because we have some vacancies and it was a resourcing issue. Other times we might use it to manage potential conflicts for if it's council projects or provide review for, I suppose, more contentious applications, or if we are disagreeing with an element, we would seek peer review for that.
Great, thank you.
Deputy Mayor.
Sorry, thank you. So I note that in this application there are a number of non-complying elements, but I feel that they have been sorted out from the performance criteria, and that has been well described. The recommendation is for approval subject to conditions, and I note there are 31 conditions and 11 advice clauses, so this has been looked at. There are 4 objections. I note that the objections raise concerns with access and natural values, and my reading of the report is that those objections have been addressed adequately. I think this is a really wonderful development for Kingborough. I think what it offers the community is really fantastic. We have an ageing population, and the 44 independent living units and a communal building is a really great offering, and I'm really pleased to see that this has come to us, and I congratulate the developer.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I agree, it is a really good benefit for our community. It's benefit for aged care and the need for suitable independent living accommodation for our aged care residents in central Kingston, and it also is in line with our strategic planning outcomes. There was just one of the representations that was raised in regards to the light spill onto homes, and I note that there has been a condition of the planting of trees to mitigate the light spill from the traffic into adjoining properties. I guess my question regarding that is the length of time the trees might take to grow and what could be done in the meantime to mitigate this, and also just that insurance that the trees are maintained through the life to prevent that light spill onto properties.
Ms. Heckelman.
In terms of the condition that is recommended
I don't think that there's any provisions at the moment in terms of the size of the trees, other than that they must be, I guess, in terms of a plan provided to council for suitability as part of the process that will continue on in terms of compliance and endorsement of the proposal. As part of that representation too, there was an element of ensuring that there was or concerns around parking and use of that access for parking, which also kind of could make additional noise spill into those adjoining properties. And I guess in recognising that, we also look to recommend a condition that would include signage to restrict the possible parking in that area too, to avoid some of that concern.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is, as I understand it, I'll start with a question, it is that this is the largest private investment in the Kingborough LGA in history. Is that correct?
Ms. Shakuti.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm not sure. I'd have to take that on notice.
Okay. I think when I spoke to the applicant once or twice, they mentioned that was their assertion. I believe the planning fees alone are well over $100,000. This development is critical to Christian Homes Tasmania's financial future. For those that don't know, their existing aged care property down in Blackmans Bay is currently operating on a multi-million dollar annual loss. And this new project represents their path to long-term sustainability. And this is not a confidential information. It's in their public material. And while council rightly applies diligence to planning matters, speed is now essential to get this approved. So I heartily do recommend that we follow the approval process as recommended in the report. This organisation continues to carry these losses while we deliberate, and timely progression through the planning process will make a real difference. My concern is that CHT officers have on a few occasions contacted me to express their concern about the efficiency of the approval process. No names were given, so it doesn't reflect on upon anyone here in the room. They feel that approval process has been unacceptably slow, and I understand that they were actually given an account manager or the sorts to handle this. If I could ask through you, Mayor, if that account manager... if that process had been broken, or maybe that person had left the role, what's the situation on this account manager managing the process? A single contact point for them,
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. I wouldn't say it is an account manager. It is very similar to how we manage all our other applications, in that they are assigned a planning officer for larger applications and more complex applications such as this. It will be assigned to a senior planner or one of our team leaders. I will also, as the director, liaise with the applicant as required as well to resolve any issues and facilitate discussions, etc., if there are, problems along the way or points of contention. With this particular application, there was some complexity around the requirements for the road connection or termination and GM consent for that, which complicated the process.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you for that. Has that senior planner contact been broken, or has that person stayed in place through the entire process?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor, no, that didn't happen because that particular senior planner went on leave, and so we had to reallocate the application to another senior planner.
Councillor Antoli, if I don't prompt you, then the microphone, if you don't wait to speak before I ask you to speak, it's not going to be picked up on the audio.
No problems. Was that leave for an extensive period, or was it just like holiday leave?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor, for 1 year.
Councillor Antoli.
That's pretty extensive. Okay, thank you for helping me get to the bottom of that. So this is not an inexperienced applicant. Christian Homes Tasmania manages developments and planning applications across multiple local government areas, so they are well acquainted with standard planning processes and time frames. And for that reason, I'm imploring key leaders of council to maintain close oversight to ensure that this project proceeds efficiently and without unnecessary delay through the rest of the process. As I mentioned before, for every year that this development is not operating, they lose well over $1 million per annum. And we may think that's their problem, not ours. Their problem is our problem. They are a community aged care provider. So this development delivers social, economic and community benefit, and its success will strengthen both Kingston's local care capacity and one of Tasmania's most respected not-for-profits. And so for these reasons, I implore my colleagues to support this recommendation for approval.
Thank you, Councillor Antolli. Are there further contributions? Questions? No, I'm going to put the recommendation. It's moved by the Deputy Mayor and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. A planning authority of Council now adjourns at 7:05 p.m. and open session of Council recommences at 7:05 p.m. We're now on page 117, petition still being actioned. A report on the petition headed installation of footpaths and upgrades on Cleburne Street, Kingston, will be provided at a future meeting of Council. And for petitions received in the last period, there were no petitions received at the time the agenda was compiled. Still on page 117, we've now come to notices of motion. Councillor Gladewright has submitted a notice of motion headed Draft Kingborough Local Provisions Schedule, and there is a response from Mr Stewart. I've got a mover in Councillor Gladewright. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Antolli. Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to begin by acknowledging the very large number of residents who have contacted me to share their concerns about what the proposed Landscape Conservation Zone, or LCZ, means for them. I especially appreciate the respectful tone in which many of these conversations have been held, but it was also heartbreaking hearing the stress that this has caused our community. I've heard many highly emotional stories of uncertainty as to whether people can continue with their future plans. I was called out recently for using language like lay people and comments suggesting that planning is too complex for most residents to understand. I'm sorry if this was patronising. I see now that the community members speaking up on this issue are not uninformed. Those contributing to the debate include people with significant expertise. These intelligent, skilled people have every right to question what is happening to their properties, and it is important that Council recognises this and engages respectfully rather than implying the public simply doesn't understand. For many, expert planners have also been engaged, and together their message is consistent. LCZ, as currently proposed, is an incorrect interpretation of the guidelines. And that is where it gets very tricky for us as councillors, as it is understood that we rely on advice from planning staff. They work extremely hard and with professionalism. We listen to them and we respect them. They have said the LCZ is the correct technical translation for roughly 1,500 properties, mostly of the former environmental living zone. However, we must acknowledge that that advice is contested, and there are various interpretations of the meaning of these zones. The overwhelming community feedback makes it clear that many residents reject the way Council has interpreted and applied the LCZ. As elected representatives, our responsibility is to reflect the community's concerns, not only endorse officer advice. Tonight's motion is not about choosing sides, but about restoring trust, clarity and balance in our planning process. I note that it says in our cover letter to the 35F report that regardless of the recommendations in this report, further discussion with representatives will be necessary during the public hearing process. Council's general approach is to remain open to making changes where appropriate, with the aim of addressing concerns and identifying workable solutions available under the TPS. Unfortunately, I have heard countless stories of residents who felt that they could explain why their property is not suitable for landscape conservation, expecting the draft zoning to change on giving that feedback, only to find out that they turn up to hearings, which is an extremely intimidating process, and feel council just stick to their LCZ justification. To me, that does not meet the definition of consultation. This is why this motion is important. This motion proposes that council seek a peer review. A peer review does not mean we are criticising council planners. Peer reviews are common and expected across many different fields. Engaging an independent consultant allows us as the planning authority to test the suggestion that rural living zone is a more appropriate zone for properties coming from environmental living, as we are now hearing loud and clear. It's quite clear in the zone definitions that the LCZ prioritises conservation above residential use, whereas the rural living zone is designed to support people living in a rural setting with environmental sensitivity. We must be honest about what LCZ therefore means. Under LCZ, many ordinary residential uses become discretionary, which means proposals are subject to extra reports, uncertainty, and the risk of refusal. That word, discretionary, creates anxiety. There's simply no guarantee of consistency. Planning isn't just about applying the rules, it's about the confidence people have that the system is fair and consistent. Adding more restrictive layers to an already slow, complex and expensive process has pushed this community over the edge. Could I please
The Deputy Mayor would like an additional 3 minutes. Got a mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Cordova. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. You have 3 more minutes.
Thank you. Adding more restrictive layers to an already slow, complex and expensive process has pushed this community over the edge, and it's time we acknowledge that. This is not about opposing conservation, and it's not a personal attack on our planners. They are good people who work very hard. It's a call for our CEO to help steer a different approach in the way we interact with our community when it comes to planning. It's about recognising that the people who live on these properties are already the stewards of their landscape, and that good planning should support them and not make their lives harder. If this motion gets up tonight, I will be advocating on behalf of the community that the independent consultant gives more consideration to the rural living zone and makes sure that they understand that while discretionary pathways technically allow development, they impose stress, cost and uncertainty, and leaves property owners vulnerable to shifting interpretations over time. People have the right to expect that their properties are recognised as homes first and foremost, not primarily as conservation areas. The rural living zone better reflects the lived reality of land use and ensures that planning rules enable rather than obstruct everyday life. I will also be advocating for the Bruny Island and Bonnet Hill SAPs to be redeveloped with meaningful consultation that seeks the community's input, including ground truthing first. Defending a draft, in my view, isn't consultative enough. It's also time to acknowledge that Council's communication strategy failed. Too many landowners only found out through community mailouts. We need to own that and we need to fix it. Finally, I want to say this. We as councillors are elected to represent our community. Yes, we must listen to professional advice, but when the community tells us loud and clear that the advice has missed the mark, our job is to act on their behalf. This motion is an opportunity to do exactly that, to show the community that their voices matter, that we have listened, and that we are willing to take steps to address their concerns. Thank you.
Further contributions? Councillor Richardson.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to propose, with the indulgence of the mover and seconder, an amendment to the motion to add to point two.
Mrs. Morton does have that.
I believe
if
so.
If she can put it up on the screen for us, that would be... You could just perhaps read that so that those who are watching here can understand the amendment.
Sure. Yeah, no problems. So this is to add a little bit of specificity, particularly with the receipt of direction 78. So part A to the amendment is that acknowledging direction 69, the Tasmanian Planning Commission, from the Tasmanian Planning Commission, the planning authority will review alternative zoning options for properties proposed to be zoned landscape conservation value, considering greater use of alternative zoning, including rural living zones, unless a commission direction or evidence and submissions or submissions from the consultant support LCZ to be the most suitable zone. And then the second part of that is in reference to direction 78, that the Tasmanian Planning Commission, in reference to the Direction 78 of the Tasmanian Planning Commission, the 35F report has a targeted review by the independent consultant of the Bruny Island and Bonnet Hill SAPs, and any recommendations related to potential amendments reviewed by the Planning Authority prior to submission to the TPC.
So could I just clarify? So the notice of motion that we have before us has a point one which acknowledges the concerns of the community. That is to stay?
Yeah, all to stay. This okay. is these are sub clauses in addition.
Okay, so where is this to go?
So it becomes A and 2B.
Right, so clause one and two as printed in the agenda stay.
Correct.
And then these, we'll just get this up on the screen so that everyone's clear what it is that we are discussing. So then that becomes, there's always a lot of pressure on Mrs. Morton to do this live in front of this many people, and she does a fantastic job, so just be patient. Thank you. And then the rest of it as printed in the agenda, correct? Okay, so I've got a mover. Do I have a seconder for that amendment? I will, but I'm just making sure there's somebody to second the amendment. But so, Councillor Gladright, you're happy with that amendment?
Yes.
And who was the seconder? Councillor Antoli, you're happy with that amendment. So this now becomes the substantive motion. So we are now, this is the motion now that we're discussing. So we've only had one speaker on it so far. Contributions, please. Councillor Cordova.
Yes. So now that this has been adopted as the new, let's call it the new motion, the last one was the original motion, and now we've added in these two dot points, so that becomes the new motion. I'm going to start by asking a question, if I may, before I launch into my substantive contribution. And that question is around, can it please be explained to me why it might be that a professional planner would be reluctant to change their professional advice on the basis of that professional advice not being approved of by other people? So why might it be that a professional planner would simply refuse to kind of change their advice? Can somebody answer
that? I'm going to give Ms. Shakuti a go at that one. And thanks. Just turn as she changes seats again. Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. Musical seats tonight. If I'm understanding your question correctly, it is would there be a reason why a professional planner would not change their position if they'd received, I suppose, concerns to, you know, opposing that. Is that the question? Yeah. So in specifically, we'll talk about this process, not, I suppose, professional planners in general. So with this process, our draft LPS is before the TPC in the hearings. That is, as the CEO described, the starting point. And the purpose of those hearings is then to consider any further evidence that is presented by representors. We, the professional planning staff that are attending, are open to hearing that evidence and thinking about that on its merits in consideration with the other requirements that both the TPC and Council need to consider in providing recommendations, and then the TPC need to consider in their decision-making. So the representations and the evidence presented at the hearings is one component of that, and then there are other legislated guidelines that must be considered. So, for example, the Section 8A guidelines under LUPA, as well as state policies and strategies such as Stralis. So all of those things will be considered together, and if there is merit to change their position regarding a particular zone, then that will occur.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, ma'am. So I've obviously had a lot of communication from members of the community, both for and against. What's been really interesting, I guess, about this particular motion is subsequent to the Margate Community Hall meeting, this motion that we have before us was not exactly the motion that was proposed at that original Margate meeting. It's substantially different, and as we're in this kind of interesting rock and a hard place position now where there's large groups of people who are against the LCZ, for example, but who think that the motion before us doesn't go far enough, and then there's another cohort of people who don't want to spend exorbitant amounts of ratepayers' money engaging consultants. So there's multiple cohorts here. I'm saying that there's a diversity of opinion. The Tasmanian Planning Commission and not Council decide zoning after testing evidence against the Land Use Planning Approvals Act, Section 34, and also the Southern Tasmanian Regional Land Use Strategy. So there's also zone application guidelines. So changing who drafts our reviews or changing council's response does not by itself move a boundary. It doesn't by itself change anyone's LCZ outcome. Direction 69 from the TPC for revised mapping and qualified advice requires qualified advice if zones are to change. And so unless the motion before us actually delivers any of that substantive evidence, then it will mainly just change the process rather than changing any of the outcomes. So that's the key point here, is that we heard initially from the mover that this is about restoring trust, clarity and balance to this process. And I think we really need to scrutinise how exactly it will restore trust or balance or clarity, when in fact it's not actually going to change any of the outcomes necessarily around LCZ or around the SAPs. It won't necessarily change those outcomes. It will just change the process. So the process doesn't guarantee rezoning changes. The TPC makes the final call on those zones after weighing all the evidence at the hearings. Tweaking who writes our council's submission doesn't promise different outcomes for landowners, and we can see that in Direction 69, that it says that the TPC will consider council's response alongside all the other hearing material and submissions. So these extra steps that we're talking about taking on, which do include new consultant work and peer review and proposed SAP changes, the reality is there's no guarantee that that will result in the outcomes that most people want, or some people want, among the people who have contacted us. But there is a guarantee that it will come with concomitant costs and complexity and extra administrative burden and a whole bunch of things that we can be guaranteed in terms of the difficulty of implementing this without any of the guarantees that we'll actually receive the benefit that these cohorts within the community are asking for. I also want to point out that if Council fails to meet a legislated timeframe under Part 3A of LUPA, the Commission may assume Council's responsibilities for the LPS process and recover its costs. So that's Section 35T of LUPA. These hearings are quasi-judicial. The TPC expects qualified planners who can be examined on evidence, and mid-process shifts in representation can reduce efficiency and continuity and the weight given by council's evidence. And I've been trying to make this point that who exactly are we planning on employing, which suitably qualified consultant, who gets to choose them, and how long will they have to scrub up on the detail and to learn all of the months and years of corporate memory that will be required in order to make an assessment when the TPC asks why were these lines on a map drawn in the way they were, how long will it take this independent consultant to come up to speed with why those decisions were made? And what will happen if they fundamentally disagree? What will happen if they provide a different set of words to what the Kimberley Council would have provided, but they still don't make anyone happy? Like, what if they provide just a different set of words that also make other people unhappy, but for different reasons? So even a well-written new response doesn't compel zoning changes. The TPC still tests everything against the guidelines and the Southern Tasmanian Regional Land Use Strategy. So my final 3 points. The TPC controls the process once the S35F report is lodged. So that's where we're at right now. We're getting all these directions from the TPC. That's why we're getting these directions from the TPC, because ultimately it's the TPC that calls the shots. The ability to revise positions can only occur where it is justified by the statutory tests. And finally, major procedural shifts can add huge costs to ratepayers, cause additional delay, without getting any of the benefit that we've been told that we might get, without making things more trustworthy, giving us more clarity or giving us more balance. So I've heard the concern about the landscape conservation zone, and I've heard the concern about the SAPs. It's important to point out that I've also heard the opposite argument, which is that, you know, for example, when it comes to rural living, you know, do people understand the full impacts of the different intensification that can occur in those different zones? So, for example, you know, if there's a quarry nearby, or if there's, you know, you used to... May I please request...
Would you like an extension
three minutes, please.
The motion is moved to Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Gladright, that Councillor Cordova be granted an additional 3 minutes. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. The question before us tonight is whether changing how we prepare our response will fix these issues. In my view, this proposal won't fix the issues that have been raised with us. There will be no guarantees on outcomes. Changing authors or adding peer review won't in itself move a boundary on a map. Only defensible evidence can provide that. So the Tasmanian Planning Commission makes the final decision on zoning, and they require evidence to do so, and that evidence is tested against the planning rules. Simply switching authors or adding a peer review does not on its own redraw a map. So whilst I support continuous improvement in our process, this proposal, if I can use a medical analogy, this proposal is a salve that won't actually reach the wound. It adds costs and complexity, but it does not guarantee any change to LCZ on specific properties. If there's compelling new evidence that justifies different zoning, then that should be brought to the Commission in the form that the Commission requires. And that's where the outcome will be decided. So that's why I'm voting against this proposal. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. If I could start with a question. First of all, I want to thank Councillor Richardson for his amendment, which I do believe materially improves the motion. I thank him for being sensitive to the community's concerns. If I could just seek some direction from you, Mayor, regarding 2B, where it talks about the SAPs. Councillor Richardson rightly does target Bruny Island and Bonnet Hill. They are wildly unpopular from what I understand. Would this not be a great opportunity, though, for the consultant to maybe review all the SAPs? I'm aware of individuals that are very unhappy about a range of others, in particular the Burwood one. I believe one individual spent $40,000 on a representation to oppose that and got quite a lot of sympathy from the TPC. Is there a way for us to maybe, rather than discriminating against two, to maybe for the consultant to look at all and to have that breadth given to him by the planning authority? Could I get some advice on how we could tweak it?
The CEO.
Through you, Mayor, it's councillor's discretion as to what you include or don't include in this notice of motion that you're debating this evening. I would, however, point out the size of the magnitude of quantity of work that would be required if we were to review all SAPs. You know, they are a fundamental tenant of what's included within the LPS that is currently under consideration by the Tasmanian Planning Commission. You'll note that the motion refers to Direction 78 that we've received through from the Commission. That provides me through to Wednesday to provide them a timeline associated with doing these pieces of work. If we were to review all of those SAPs, that would be really considerable, both in terms of cost and timing associated with it, and that's all subject to us finding a suitably skilled consultant or expert that can undertake this work. One of the reasons the Commission has asked for that timeline is so they can get about the business of scheduling other hearings, and those are the things that can continue on in parallel to these pieces of work being done. As you rightly pointed out in your earlier question that you asked, there are people that really just want to get to the end of this process and get their new zones and get on with delivering things. That's the Planning Commission's intent, in my understanding, is to be able to move things on as quickly as possible. So I do acknowledge the work that potentially needs to be done, and the motion gives direction on that. However, I would encourage councillors not to reach too wide in terms of the scope of that for cost reasons, time reasons, and to be able to actually move this process forward with the intent and dedicated direction that the motion might be inferring tonight.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I've just got a question for now. So we received information about the amendment at about 5:19, so I really haven't digested that. And I've heard from the mover in regards to the original motion, but I'd like to understand and lean into the point A and point B that have been put forward, just to have some understanding and context in regards to why they've been added, please.
Sorry, point of order,
yes, Councillor Antoli.
I haven't finished my question. And you went to another...
I didn't realise. I thought...
No, the whole pausing thing that we have to do because of the microphones, there might have been a miscommunication there. I apologise if that didn't come through.
But no, sorry. I thought you'd finished.
No, not at all.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Councillor Midgley, do you mind if I come back to you? Councillor Antoli, my
thanks for your indulgence, Mayor. Appreciate the advice from the CEO, and I understand the time and the cost. Haste does make waste. This is an opportunity that we don't always have. I think it would be great for the consultant to be given the scope to look at problematic when in terms of community feedback SAPs. We don't have that many. Arguably, we have too many, but we don't have that many. I believe there are six, or is there a little bit more than that? Maybe you could advise.
Mr. Chikudi, or the CEO, either.
Through you, Mayor. I might just double check on the exact number so I don't mislead you. But.
It's a limited number, and I'm pretty sure that looking at representations, a quick glance, especially from with the support of planning staff, you could zero in on the, shall we say, problematic and troubled SAP. So based on that, could I seek the council's indulgence and the mover of the amendment to include Bruny Island and Bonnet Hill SAPs and others with negative representations? As I understand it, there aren't that many. How do we go about that process?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor. Seeing this this motion has now become the substantive, you'd be moving an amendment to this motion to broaden the scope. So that would be something that you would do, Councillor, and then it would go to the mover and seconder for their views.
As
Councillor Antoli.
As a seconder, I'm not able to move an amendment.
No, there's somebody else. You can foreshadow the amendment that somebody else can move, and then you can. If yourself and the mover of the motion agree to it, then you can.
How do you feel about it, mover? Yeah, mover seems quite happy. Maybe if I could ask someone to move the amendment that we talk about those two SAPs, but also any other identified problematic SAPs based on community representation. Words to that effect. Is anyone willing to move that amendment?
No. Okay.
All right. Let it be noted that no one else wanted to move that amendment.
Okay. Councillor Antoli, are you still waiting? You're still waiting on a response from the CEO?
No, I might add my contribution to the plate if that's all right. And hold fine.
Thank you. Sorry, I thought you said you were going to make your contribution now.
No, I said if I can make it later and I'll hold fire.
I missed the later bit. Okay, yeah. We'll go back to Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. So the question that I asked before, and sorry, Councillor Antoli, it is that interesting pause between our questions, was in regards to the fact that I had received some written information regarding an amendment at 5:19 today. So I haven't had a lot of time to digest that, and it's up there now, and I've had a read, but I'm curious and like to lean into the points A and point B and why they have been recommended as an amendment. Could I please ask for some information in regards to that?
Well, I guess the only appropriate people to respond to that would be Councillor Richardson, who's moved the amendment, or Councillor Antoli or Councillor Gladright. So who would like to take that? Councillor Richardson.
Thank you. In the receipt of the two directions, I thought I thought it appropriate to be more specific around the scope of the inquiry by the independent consultant, specifically noting that where Landscape Conservation Zone currently sits, it needs to be reconsidered. And it needs to have significant reasoning for it to be, for it to remain, sorry, as a LCZ. So that's part A. And part B was in response, as it says on the screen, to Direction 78. And I think it's pretty clear that we're saying that we want the independent consultant to review those SAPs, make any recommendations, bring them back to the planning authority so that we can review those submissions or those recommendations prior to the submission. So I think the two sub-clauses as written are pretty straightforward. Happy for Councillor Natale or anybody else to add to that if they would like to, but they seem pretty clear to me.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. It's a good question. Since the mover of the motion, the Deputy Mayor, first came up with her draft some, I would say, 3 weeks ago almost now? It was a one-line motion, and we got advice, and then it was crafted to be what it is now. And since then, we've actually had two directions from the TPC come our way. And as Councillor Richardson says, we need to be specific in the way we respond so that we can be we can empower the consultant to move quickly, to give him or her the direction and the space they need to get us out of this timing pickle. So it's been a bit of a cavalcade of incidences that have happened quite quickly. And quite frankly, Direction 69 actually has opened the door for us to actually create the momentum for this amendment in the first place. And I think we should just be including those facts in.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Just a question at this stage.
Yep,
that was my question.
Oh, that was your question? Okay. Councillor Cordova.
My question relates to to clause number 4, where it says, where it mentions that the TPC hearings to the engaged consultant and one member of council staff. My understanding was that the allocation of staff duties is the responsibility of the CEO and not elected members, because the Local Government Act Section 28.3 says that, and this is the quote from the Act, in performing any function under this Act or any other Act, a councillor must not direct or attempt to direct an employee of the council in relation to the discharge of the employee's duties. And I'm just wanting to seek clarification if Clause 4 does somehow, does it not contravene that by the council directing council staff, and whether there's, you know, one staff member there or 100, that's the job for the CEO, isn't it, and not elected members.
The CEO.
Through you, Mayor. So you're correct in terms of the nature of the Local Government Act. I guess the way I interpret this this clause within the notice of motion is that you're providing me guidance that I then use to look at the allocation of staffing to this process, both in terms of the use of external expertise, but also acknowledging the continuity that is created through using internal resource there. So I don't take it as an overstep in terms of the Local Government Act, because it's still my role then to look at the allocation of resource and how we do that.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a question to start with. If this motion goes ahead as is, and is our understanding that the TPC will look to reschedule anything to do with LCZ, Bruneau Island, Bonnet Hill, I guess to the back end of the hearings, and then anything that doesn't apply to that will be brought forward. And as it stands, are we saying that the consultant would oversee all these matters, or just oversee the LCZ, the Bonnet Hill and the Bruneau Island discussions?
The CEO.
Through you, Mayor. Addressing the first point first, so yes, through my conversations with the TPC, and I need to be clear, I'm speaking with the Executive Commissioner, not the Commissioners actively involved in the assessment of the process. This is an arm's length process, so it's engagement with not with the people who are actively involved in this process. But yes, they would like to reschedule other hearings that aren't contained within the scope of this motion, so that they can continue at the same time as the work is done internally to respond to the Direction 69 and the additional work that the motion requests under the review of those two SAPs. To come to your second point about the role of the consultant, the way I read it is that the motion as drafted at the moment, consultant would, or the external expert, would support and draft the process responding to the Direction 69, additionally undertake a review of those two SAPs that are identified there, and that they would then become a part of the ongoing hearings process. So I would see that as being part of the process through through all the hearings. If that's not what it's intended, I'm happy to take the clarification through the mover and of the motion.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you. So just a follow-up question. So if it was to go that way, and are we saying that no more hearings could commence until the consultant has been engaged?
The CEO.
Through you, Mayor. No, that's not what I'm saying. So I wrote to the Commission last week and asked for an adjournment of the hearings that were scheduled for today, tomorrow and the next day, so that we could respond to what the end result of this motion was tonight. In saying that, I know the Commission would be looking to schedule hearings potentially as soon as next week to recommence. In parallel to that, I need to respond to firstly the Direction 78, which will be when I set expectations of the time frame that Council can undertake these pieces of work and when they will be done. And from there, the Commission will be I guess moving to schedule the hearings that relate to these content beyond that date. I guess as a final response, we need to do some work about who that external expert is. As you know, we've heard this evening, a number of planning consultants, a number of people that are active working in this market have been involved in this this process already in different contexts. As I point out in the officer's response to the motion and the agenda, I don't know how easily we're going to find someone in the market that's both suitably skilled, independent in the process, and also willing to take on this work, how easily or how quickly we'll find that. So that's a challenge for us to respond to quite rapidly following this evening's meeting.
Councillor Bain, anything further?
And I'll save my contribution.
Thank you. Councillor Fox, and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Listening to what's being said around the table and all the letters and emails I've received, it's quite obvious that the transition to the statewide planning scheme will always be controversial, because robust criteria must be applied by planning staff, consultants, councillors and the planning Tasmanian Planning Commission. We have, in my mind, three options. We can delay the existing process by bringing in consultants, which will confuse and stall the process defined by the Tasmanian Planning Commission. The second option would be to disengage from the current process and let the Tasmanian Planning Commission handle the submissions, with the loss of local knowledge and staff's professional input, causing further delays and additional expenses to the community. Our third option could be to continue with the existing process. Community opinion will be formally dealt with by Council and the Tasmanian Planning Commission. Detailed discussions and community input to date will not be lost. In all three options, the Tasmanian Planning Commission will have the final say. Planning is a long-term process requiring hindsight and vision. The community needs a rigorous planning scheme that reflects local circumstances such as fire, flood, and access to services and infrastructure. The Kingborough's planning scheme must also fit in with the statewide planning scheme. I personally do not support changing an important process in midstream. Councillors have approved the draft local provision schedule, which has been sent to the Planning Commission. Council has received, collated and commented on submissions from the public, which have been forwarded to the Planning Commission. The Tasmanian Planning Commission is holding hearings, allowing residents to directly put their view to the Commission. In my opinion, Council should stick with the current process as formally specified by the Tasmanian Planning Commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Next, I have Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. A quick question about, because I'm interested to know who will hire the consultant and how we can ensure that that suitably qualified professional will give us a beneficial outcome, and I mean beneficial for the community as well as for the ratepayer. So this motion here falls silent on resource allocation. So am I correct that the CEO gets to hire the consultant, whoever they might be, and then we say, OK, you've got to start next week and be there at the hearing? And if most of Tassie's planning consultants are currently engaged fighting this very battle on behalf of many constituents, my question is, what's our cap on expenditure on this? Because it kind of appears like council might be a bit of a distressed buyer when we enter the marketplace asking for a consultant to please work for us and start next week. And what if the planners out there say, okay, it'll be $10,000 an hour, it'll be $1,000. Their planners are very expensive already, but what if these are huge costs, and there's what is the cap on the costs that councillors liable for if this motion passes tonight? What's the maximum amount of ratepayers' money that we might spend on a consultant planner?
The CEO.
Through you, Mayor. Subject to what has passed in tonight's motion will in some ways determine the scope. I don't have a figure for how much this work will cost at this stage. What I would say is we do have procurement guidelines, in particular thresholds above which decisions for procurement need to come back to council. That's $250,000. I note that as a matter of policy and under the Local Government Act. In terms of the process that we would intend to follow would be, first of all, a bit of a market sounding exercise, a bit of an EOI where we go out to the market and find out who is even interested in engaging in the process, and from that send out a scope which would determine and get people to respond with costing against that. The intent would be that staff would do the first cut of the analysis of that, and we would bring it back to council anyway, given the acknowledgement of the sensitivity around this particular issue. We would deem it something that it would be in the interests of council to understand who the appropriately skilled individual would be to do this work. All of that takes time. So I do acknowledge that as part of this, we're probably talking a few weeks before we would be able to make a formal decision about this. In the context of the initial direction that we've received from the Planning Commission around a timeline of early November when they were looking for this first piece of work to be returned, I acknowledge that, you know, that is a substantial extension of time that we would need to be requesting from them. And it's a little bit of a how long is a piece of string for the timeline that I need to go back to them on Wednesday. So I guess all of this puts us in a little bit of an uncertain position, and I guess my response probably talks to process more than actually articulating how much this will cost the organisation.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to follow up to that, so if we've established, which we have, that this isn't currently, as the motion reads, it is an uncapped cost, and I'm worried that there's planners out there licking their chops right now because there's going to be an enormous... well, you know, we don't have very long to hire this person if this thing passes, and so it's really up to them what they charge us, really. Would, in the opinion of the staff, would you recommend that we amend this motion to cap the cost at a certain figure? What would that quantum be? Wouldn't it be prudent financial management to cap this cost somewhere, at least just in case this thing does pass?
CEO.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. I'm not quite sure how to answer that question. I think we need to, following on from the decision from the council this evening, do some work to find out, you know, how big the scope is or it isn't. You know, this... The reality is, regardless of any iteration around the theme here tonight, if we are appointing an external expert to come into this process, it will be at a not inconsequential cost to the organisation. I would be hesitant to put a figure on that or a cap on that and then not do the work with the rigour that it deserves. In saying that, I also am loath to have an open checkbook on this because, you know, this is ratepayer money that we're talking about here, and we need to take that obligation seriously. So, without not answering your question, I can't give you a suggested cap in this moment. I'm sorry.
Councillor Cordova.
One more question then through you, Mayor, is can you give us a minimum figure? What would be the best case scenario if this thing passes tonight and we have to go out to market tomorrow as a distressed buyer? What's the minimum amount that we should... I think the ratepayers deserve to know, actually, if we're just burning money, I think the ratepayers deserve to know, you know, roughly a quantum. Give us a ballpark figure of how much ratepayers' money we're going to be spending with an uncapped liability that we, you know, that might get passed tonight.
The CEO.
Again, through you, Mayor. So I guess I'll provide some context about the work that's required. So the hearings processes are going to be sort of 2 to 3 days a week, is my understanding. So the TPC had already indicated they plan to, I guess, introduce a little bit more time into those processes because they have been a heavy load for everyone involved. Those hearings are likely to go well into the new year, is my understanding. So that's through the remainder of October, the little that there will be left once the hearings are scheduled, November, probably early December. My understanding is there won't be hearings in January and then probably into February. Depending on the nature of the advice that we provide back, you know, there's... What's that? Probably minimum, you know, could be 12 weeks of hearings associated with the process there. If you look at those hearings as being maybe four or five hours a day contact time, you know, that number at an hourly rate adds up pretty fast. I'm not going to try and do the numbers in my head, unfortunately. Alongside that, you've got the response in A and B of Section 2 of the motion. So a review of the landscape conservation zone and the application of that. Probably 30,000 to $50,000 between the two A and B that I would suggest would be the sort of quantum that I would expect for those two pieces of work combined. So I guess what I'm suggesting is the number is going to be getting pretty close to six figures at an absolute minimum.
Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I don't think that we're burning money here. From what we've heard from residents, within reason, this is a necessary step and one that the ratepayers, I believe, is a sensible step to take. What I've heard is that hearings will be pushed back. So I guess the thing that, well, I'm comfortable with the motion, I think I struggle with the fact that there's a lot of people in the room and in our council area that didn't make a submission. I think we've acknowledged that as a council, and it is what it is. We can't go back in time. But I guess my question is, if those hearings that specifically relate to the LCZ zoning of their property, whether there's still any capacity for them to make a very short submission that says, this is my property, I'd like it reconsidered. Is there any capacity for that, or can that request be made in the time that we have left?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor. To my understanding, there isn't an avenue for someone to make a new representation at this stage of the process. In saying that, in correspondence with the Planning Commission, there may be scenarios where they go back out to the community to ask specific questions. That's at their discretion. That's not a council decision to make, but it is something that they have as a tool available to them. And it's typically if there was going to be a significant change from what was exhibited in the first instance to what was to potentially going to happen from thereafter. So that is something that is within the Commission's toolkit, in my understanding, to be able to undertake, but that's not something that the Council can directly, that's not something we can do as part of this process.
Councillor Dean.
Could I ask, and as you pointed out, it's not our call, but given that we went out with a PPZ, the Bushland and Coastal Living Zone, and that was then obviously rejected, have they said anything whether that would constitute a significant change and may trigger contacting residents?
Get the CEO.
Through you, Mayor. As part of the exhibition period, we didn't go out with the PPZ, so that was a new advent that was created by staff to respond to a number of the concerns that we heard about the LCZ. The reason that the Commission has provided that they have decided not to proceed with further consideration, regardless of the value of the PPZ, was because it hadn't been through that public process. So I guess in some ways what we're saying is that it's sort of confirming the point that if something hasn't been as part of public exhibition, then it's not something that they're going to consider without a supplementary process as part of the, yeah.
Councillor Dean.
I suppose then, just on this point, is there any capacity, would it make any difference if we as a council wrote to the Commissioner and requested that additional consultation or an opening or additional opening for submissions or representations were made to those that perhaps missed out in the last round?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor. I'm not in a position to comment whether or not that would be effective or not in terms of swaying the Commission as part of the process. That would be a decision for them. I guess if it was a direction of this organisation, as from Council and the Planning Authority, to write to that Commission, to that effect, that is something I can do, and that would make the decision theirs to make.
Councillor Dean.
Thank you for answering my questions. Look, everyone seems to be holding off making their contributions, but I will just simply say that as it reads, I am supportive of this motion, and I hope that it gets enough support so that it's accepted tonight. Thank you, Mayor.
Further contributions? Councillor Street, is that a... Yes?
Yeah, that was the eyebrow raised by the property. I am supportive of the motion. I thank the mover and seconder and Councillor Richardson for his amendments, which I think are eminently sensible in the circumstances that we find ourselves in. The situation that we find ourselves in, the Planning Authority needs to accept, is of our making. There can be no question about that. We take the advice that we are given. It's professional advice. And we utilise that to the best of our ability to try and come up with an outcome that is the correct outcome. Notwithstanding that, as a member of the Planning Authority and as a councillor, I need to accept that the groundswell of public opinion in relation to this matter shows that we have clearly done something wrong. And I say that whether or not even if every property that's proposed to be zoned a particular way is correct, we have still done something wrong by virtue of the massive amount of public opinion and public distress that this situation has caused. And I need to accept my responsibility for that, and I do. Where we are now, though, is in a situation where we need to respond to that community outcry that we all recognise is there, and try to find a way forward based on proper planning principles and proper advice, and I think that that's what this proposal does. And that's not to suggest that the advice that we've had so far is not proper advice or is not professional advice, but like I say, we need to accept, I think, as a planning authority, that given the community sentiment, there is an issue here that needs to be resolved, and this gives us the best ability to do that. I don't anticipate that every member of the community is going to be satisfied with the outcome. I can't promise that, and I'm not going to sit here and promise that. But it's my hope that at least we come out the other end of this with something that the community is satisfied that we have taken every step we possibly can to get the correct answer. It's been said tonight that this process was always going to cause controversy. I hope that by my contribution so far, you realise that I don't accept that that's the case. This didn't need to be as controversial as it has, and we only need to look at the over 20 council areas who have already gone through this process to know that it didn't need to be like this. Because it hasn't, with few exceptions, and I accept that there are some exceptions, our neighbours to the south being a notable one, there has not been this level of controversy. And so we need to accept our part in that we are a reason for that controversy and that outcry, and do what we can now to try and rest back some of that and get to a position where hopefully the community is satisfied that we've reached a balanced position on the application of this zoning. Noting that not everyone's going to be happy, there are always going to be particular situations in which landscape conservation zoning isn't appropriate or is the most appropriate zoning. We can't avoid that. But hopefully, like I say, with the support of an external consultant who has been selected on the basis of this motion and the sentiment behind it, will get us some way to achieving a better balance. So I appreciate the motion. I'm grateful to community members for coming tonight, and I'm grateful for everybody that's written to me. I apologise that not all of you have received a response. I'm trying to get through them and I will respond to all of you. But please understand that the message has been received, at least by me, and we're going to be continuing down this path with a very close eye on what's going on, and hopefully coming to a position that the community are more satisfied with.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Mayor. Just a quick question, just so that we can set community expectations accordingly. We're going to discuss the finance report later, which shows that the initial full-year budgeted underlying loss, there was a good news story that it has decreased to a forecast underlying loss of $2.284 million. 1% rate increases, for every 1% of rate increase, that translates to about $40 per rate payer, according to the average, the average rate payer in Kingborough. So the question really is, to set community expectations appropriately, what kind of rate increases are we thinking about? If this is a six-figure unplanned-for budget expenditure, either what's going to get cut? I keep trying to get more money for community grants or a street tree strategy or something. It's always those things that are in the too hard basket because we simply can't afford it. We have this underlying loss we need to tackle. So really, the question is, how much are the rates going to go up, or what of the good community services that I keep fighting for are going to get cut because we're making this unbudgeted, uncapped expenditure that's in the six-figure range? What's going to get cut, or how much are rates going to go up by?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor. This theoretically will be expenditure that is solely within this financial year, so I would like to hope that it doesn't have any ongoing impact on the rates burden that our community wear beyond this financial year. It may have an impact on the deficit that we record at the end of this financial year. In saying that, there are some ways that we may look to manage the costs associated with this work. We do have staffing vacancies in some areas, and so there may be some opportunity to use unrealised staffing resource budget to be able to fund this work. Additionally, there are other line items. I mentioned business improvement earlier in the council meeting tonight. I may look to be able to use some of that budget to fund this work. We do have some consultant lines. Certainly within the planning space, we have been, as you know, we had a consultant planner here this evening. Been using them extensively because of staffing shortfalls, so probably don't have a lot of headroom in those budgets. I guess my role is to manage our expenditure across the organisation and make sure that we are making every dollar work as hard as it possibly can. There may be some trade-offs that I need to make associated with a decision this evening in order to be able to fund this. I haven't done that work yet. We haven't known the scope of this, and certainly we don't know the full cost that will be associated with this work as yet. That'll be something that I need to work on subsequent to this meeting, and that'll come back through council by way of the financial reports that you receive in your agendas. And if I do need to have a further conversation with councillors about change of resource levels across functional areas in the organisation above thresholds, then I will do that as well.
Thank you. Anything further, Councillor Cordova? No. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess I'd just like to start by, in life, there's nothing like a lived experience to understand the complexities of what happens when it's in your face. And I really acknowledge that. I acknowledge that this is my first time of a planning change for our local council, and I've heard stories now of our last planning change and the impact that it had on residents when they didn't know that their zoning had changed back then.
I'd also like to thank the many individuals who've got back to me, and like Councillor Street, apologies that I haven't got back to you all. I think they all just came sort of flooding through. And, yeah, I will get back to you. But during the last couple of weeks, I have spoken to many people. Thank goodness for headsets that you can, you know, garden and talk to people and listen really to your deep connection to land, your commitment to environmental stewardship, the businesses that you run and your aspirations for the future. It's been wonderful to get to know the community members and hear where why you love where you live, and we know that our place and our home means so much and so deep meaning for us. I've read many of your submissions, and I can see that the presentations are valid and there's compelling reasons around your properties, and acknowledge that many of you have spent a lot of money in regards to engaging with external consultants as well. However, the motion tonight, I've got concerns just in the complexities of it. I feel that there's operational matters should be dealt with separately and more appropriately through other channels. I support aspects of it, but I can't support the motion in its entirety, and I guess that's why I can't support this motion tonight. I also acknowledge Councillor Dean's question in regards to people who did not make a submission, and I've heard more and more in regards, we've heard that tonight in regards to questions, and it would be great if there was an opportunity for the people who didn't receive information that their zoning was changing and how there can be an opportunity to do so. So I look forward to the CEO's follow-up in regards to how that process can happen. So my reasons why, and some people would like to know this, is the Planning Commission's Directive 69 issued to Council on the October 10 provided clear instruction for Council to reconsider the application of the rural living zone to areas currently zoned environmental living. Our planning staff, who have deep lived experience 3 years of this issue, have worked through all the relevant hearings and are best placed to respond to this directive. That said, given the high community concern, if this motion doesn't get supported tonight, I would support an independent peer review of council staff submission before it proceeds to the planning authority for final consideration. I would believe that review would bring an added layer of transparency and assurance for the community. It's important to remember that the TPC itself serves as an independent review body, and engaging an external consultant at this stage, particularly not one familiar with the Kingborough local provision schedule, as we have heard, could result, as we have heard, in significant delays and additional costs. In regards to the review of the specific area plans, at some aspects of this I believe it's an important issue. I acknowledge the public hearings scheduled for ZAPS were last week were intended to provide an opportunity for community input. And there is definitely merit in the suggestion that the Bruny Island SAP in particular should be reviewed separately. I've heard from the community the unique needs in regards to the north and south and Alona. And a Bruny Island SAP as a whole, there's challenges in that in regards to that diversity. But I do think this motion has become complicated with multiple entwined issues. And while that complexity reflects the challenges of planning in a diverse municipality, I believe this approach is not the way forward. I acknowledge the valid concerns raised and agree that aspects of our planning processes need review. I cannot support removing this work from our experienced planning team. Engaging an external consultant to attend hearings and write the submission is unfamiliar with the complex history. It would cause unnecessary disruption, and is why we have the TPC process in place. Instead, let's proceed with the directive of the TPC into a robust and transparent council submission and maintain the involvement of our experienced staff throughout the process. And that, in my view, is the most responsible way to address community concerns and hold the integrity of our planning work. Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to make my contribution. I note that it's late, and I note that the gallery would rather be at home with their family than being here, so I want to thank them for their patience and their quiet patience to hear this out. This motion is about getting it right for our community, for our staff, and for the integrity of the Planning Authority. From the very beginning, I've been a critic of the broad brush application of the landscape conservation zone in our draft LPS, and it hasn't been easy for me to sometimes feel like I was the lone voice in the room. but tonight the tide has turned. Eyes have been opened, and I'm deeply grateful for that new awareness across the chamber. I want to thank Councillor Street for his humility. We've come to understand that while we received professional advice, we weren't always critical enough in how we examined it. I'm reminded of something a former Treasurer of Tasmania once told me in a private meeting, that as a public official, it is always your duty to consider bureaucratic advice, but simultaneously to interrogate it. In my view, we haven't done that enough, not just with regards to the LCZ, but across the board. And that's why I found it so momentous when our Deputy Mayor publicly acknowledged that reality and with courage moved this motion forward. She reached out to me as a bridge maker between council and the vast community of more than 1,600 residents who are deeply upset by the direction council has taken with the LPS, and I was heartened by that gesture, and I was glad to lend my full support to a genuine moment of consensus. And I want to thank our Deputy Mayor publicly. Together we now have a rare chance to correct the course this LPS ship has been travelling. We all know that the LCZ has caused widespread concern, and the Tasmanian Planning Commission has recognised this too, because in Direction 69, which we got barely 10 days ago, it directed Council to, quote, review the application of the landscape conservation zone in the draft LPS and provide further justification for its application, including consideration of the appropriateness of the rural living zone for land currently proposed to be zoned landscape conservation zone, unquote. That is the independent umpire telling us, in effect, to go back and to do better, to examine alternatives, including the rural living zone, and to rebuild confidence in the process before hearings resume. When you hand in your draft exam to the professor, and he gives it back to you and circles parts of it and says, with a wink, have another crack, don't be a fool and say, well, you're the final arbiter, just take it as it is. You'll get an F. So this motion delivers all of this. It calls for a qualified, free from allegations of bias, chosen by council, independent consultant to prepare the technical response, review alternative zones to the currently assessed LCZ properties, and ensure that the final outcomes reflect evidence coupled with community concern. It also proposes that the Planning Authority request independent review of the SAPs, pending a separate process that includes genuine community consultation. And this is about ensuring those plans are revisited transparently in partnership with the people they affect. And I may go over time, so I'd like to get some indulgence from my peers if I do. This point's really important. Our planners have faced relentless public pressure and personal criticism in the recent months. Some of it is unfair. Some of it is distressing. Even the Commission has noted the strain this has caused. That's why the concept of engaging an independent consultant has actually been greeted with a great deal of positive feedback from the community. Many residents have felt aggrieved by the planning function through the hearings to date, to see this as a constructive and balanced step, one that can help rebuild confidence, provide neutrality, and ensure everyone feels heard. Planning staff will no longer need to be at the helm copping the onslaught of public upset. And for those concerned that engaging a consultant might cost council money, let's keep perspective here. It's far more important to spend a modest amount now to defend your integrity and the planning system and to fix what should have been questioned from the beginning, than to sit by while property values across our municipality potentially plummet and our community becomes even more divided by a process already criticised by the Commission.
Councillor Antoli, would you like another 3 minutes?
Yes, please. I'm almost finished too.
So move Councillor Cordova and seconded Councillor Midgley that Councillor Antoli be granted an additional 3 minutes. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you for the extra time. This is not a luxury expense. It's a necessary investment that protects our ratepayers' assets and restores public trust. As councillors, it is both our right and our duty to interrogate advice, review our processes and ensure fairness for the people we represent. And tonight's motion is our chance to do exactly that. It's to listen, to learn and to lead. And to those colleagues who may still feel uncomfortable supporting this motion, I say to you, look around you. See the faces of those in our community. People who have spent tens of thousands of dollars defending their representations to the TPC. In the main, these are not misinformed people, as some have alleged. They are, in many cases, better informed than any of us, because when your capacity to build a home changes from permitted to discretionary, it creates incredible uncertainty, not just for you, but for your bank, who must then decide whether to finance that construction cost or not. In the vast majority, I found these residents to be thoughtful, rational, and remarkably well-versed in planning detail, driven not by ideology, but by the entirely reasonable desire to protect what they have worked for. When a zoning change introduces new restrictions beyond what existed before, you have every right to ask, how is this fair? These residents have done exactly that. They've become informed, engaged, and persistent, motivated by their legitimate pecuniary interests, which are not conflicts of interests, but simply the reality of living in a democracy and a free market economy. So when your family home is at stake, you have every right to defend it. And when our residents do so with dignity, knowledge, and persistence, they deserve not dismissal, but respect, in my view. So let's show them that respect tonight. Let's act with courage, fairness, and humility and steer this ship back on course. Because this isn't about defending a position, it's about defending fairness and the right of every person in Kingborough to be heard, respected and treated justly, and finally putting the community at the heart of everything we do. Please support this motion.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Any further substantive contributions? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. So to start with, I'd just like to go through... to start with, I just want to go over some of the background that's led to where we are to date. So Kimber Council had more properties zoned environmental living zone than any other council in the state. And given the environmental living zone is not an option under the Tasmania planning scheme, council officers had the difficult job of determining which remaining zones was the best fit for these 1,500 or so properties. The difficulty being that there is no obvious like-for-like zone to transfer these environmental living zone properties to. It's not a black-and-white exercise. I think this became even more evident with our council planners proposing a new zone, the bushland and coastal living zone, that sat somewhere in between rural living and a landscape conservation zone, and if approved, recommended 800 plus properties transferred to this zone. I certainly commend our staff for putting forward this solution to try and ensure property owners' entitlements better align with what they currently have under environmental living zone. But at the same time, I think it also provides another element of doubt that the alternative, LCZ, is a good fit for these properties. When we combine this with the level of feedback from property owners around LCZ, the fact that the TPC have come back to us with this direction 69, essentially stating the bushland coastal living zone isn't an option, you surely want to stick with your recommendation to zone this number of properties to the LCZ zone, I believe it really does point to a question of, has council got this interpretation correct? Given this is a subjective exercise and a lot of it comes down to how the guidelines are interpreted, I believe it does make sense to have another planning expert review what's currently been recommended for these properties. The final decision will be made by the Tas Planning Commission, but the council's recommendations are clearly taken into consideration, and for such important decisions based on interpretations, I think we owe it to our ratepayers to do everything we can to ensure we have it right. And for that reason, I'll be supporting the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. I think everybody has spoken in their substantive contributions. I'll just make a brief one because I know that we have been here for quite some time and there have been no comfort breaks. Thank you to everyone for their contributions. This has certainly been a thorough debate, and I can only echo some of the comments of particularly Councillor Street earlier when he talked about us
feeling that we need to be accountable for the situation that we now find ourselves in. But equally, as Councillor Antoli highlighted, that we have an opportunity now, acknowledging that direction, that we can move forward with this. And I think that the process becomes difficult in that any recommendations, as Councillor Street said, any recommendations to change now the zoning will still need to be done in the context of all the different guidelines that exist, the 8A guidelines, other sections of LUPA, all the different state policies, things like the State Policy on Protection of Agricultural Land, and a whole lot of different ones. So it's not a simple process moving forward, and it isn't going to satisfy everyone. And I don't want to set up a situation now where we can say we're guaranteeing the outcome is going to be much better for everyone, because it's not in our hands. But what I do think we have the opportunity with Direction 69 is that we do get a fresh set of eyes to look over this and to provide the advice under those guidelines as an independent source of information. So I will be supporting the amended motion as it now stands, and I hope that we can move forward with this in a productive way. We are doing this because we've heard the views of the community, and when we had a workshop last week, we came together and tried to work out how we could move this forward. And it seems that the majority of people tonight who get to cast a vote in this, it looks like this motion will pass, and this is the way that we will move forward for the time being. So, having said that, Councillor Gladewright, as the mover of the motion, did you want to sum up?
Just to say thanks to everybody for your respectful contributions. This is a tricky topic, but I'm glad that we've come to this decision, and I really believe that funding a peer review will be worth it for our community.
Thank you. So I'm going to put the motion. It's moved by Councillor Gladewright and seconded by Councillor Antoli. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? A division is required. Please raise your hands. All those in favour is Councillors Antoli, Dean, Bain, Richardson, Street, Gladewright and Reet. Those against is Councillors Fox, Cordova and Midgley. The motion is carried. Okay, that brings us to the end of that. I think that we shall have a brief comfort break, and I'm sure there are probably many members of the community who would like to go home. So thank you. We will have a break and be back in 15 minutes for the rest of our agenda. Alright, welcome back. Apologies, we just needed a break after that marathon session. We are now at page 119, Office Reports to Council, proposed new road name Grey Mill Rise Adventure Bay, with a recommendation on page 122. My apologies, I needed to convey, which I just forgot, Councillor Street has had to leave us. He's had some childcare issues to deal with. So I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. Got a mover and Councillor Cordova and a second and Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
The purpose of the report is to adopt a new road name. The council should endorse the road name Grey Mill Rise for use within the subdivision, currently located at 25 Lawkins Road in Adventure Bay, and I commend the motion.
Thank you. Further discussion, comment? It's too late in the day for that, isn't it? So I'm going to put the recommendation. Moved Councillor Cordova, seconded Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Page 128, proposed new road name Harbour View Rise Kettering, with a recommendation on page 130. Looking for a mover and a seconder. Moved Councillor Dean, seconded Councillor Cordova. Councillor Dean.
To last vein, that it's just a new road being named due to a subdivision. It wasn't my mistake. I thought it was very close. Well, it is actually very close. We rejected something across the road and I got confused. So in the spirit of admitting mistakes, I'll admit that I got it wrong. This is on the other side and I will move it as read other than that.
Thank you. Any comments? No. No need to sum up then. I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Dean, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to page 134, Glensen Units, Bruny Island, with a recommendation on page 136, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. Moved Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I note that the pictures tell a thousand words. $68,000 doesn't seem very much, but in the scheme of things. And I do have a question. Is there an economy of scale to do all the units, to upgrade all the units at the same time?
Oh, Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, I think we flagged last time that it would be desirable to do them all at once, particularly in relation to having one vacant that we could move them, move the tenants into whilst theirs is being upgraded. But in terms of the economy of scale on cost, there would be a slight saving, but it wouldn't be significant.
Councillor Fox.
Are they all in a similar state of disrepair and are the others all occupied?
Through you, Mayor, yes, the other three are occupied. They are in varying degrees in terms of condition. We did upgrade one more recently, and the other two are probably not dissimilar to this one.
Councillor Fox.
I guess having just spent maybe $68,000 on a consultant now, that I'd be reluctant to sort of press the point, but I do think if our units are being occupied by a community and then they're not fit for purpose, we should at least budget towards doing them on an incremental basis as we go, and we shouldn't just let them get to a stage where they are a hazard. So that's my opinion, but I do commend the motion that we do at least do this one and do it properly. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. I've got Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I do want to thank council officers for hearing the concern of staff. Sorry, the concern of councillors. I beg your pardon. When we discussed this some time ago, that we wanted to actually move ahead to get this upgraded. I know it's a cost. I think it's the right cost. I think it's the right thing to do. And I just would like to hear from someone as to what the estimated time frame would be to complete this unit. What is your sense? What advice can you give?
Through you, Mayor, if this is approved tonight, we will look to immediately go through the procurement process. I think, as flagged in the report, finding builders on Bruny can sometimes take more time, but certainly the intent would be to get this done prior to Christmas, if possible.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova. Oh, sorry, you can finish.
Just fantastic. Look, I just want to commend us to, I think we're just a quick vote on this, but it's really, it's good for the, I've had great feedback from the Bruny Island community that we are keeping this unit, that we're not going to leave it vacant, that we're going to upgrade it and that we're going to tenant it. And maybe it's probably fair to flag with our Chief Financial Officer that probably budgeting the other units in the future budget is probably a good idea as well, because I can see us going that way. Thanks again.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple of questions to unpack a little bit the direct engagement with the 10 community housing providers, and that despite additional direct engagement with potential providers, no submissions were received. Please may I have just a touch more information on why that might be the case, or what is to be done about it, or whether things might change in the near future, what it means for the other units. Those kinds of questions come to mind.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. So, as indicated in the report, we did reach out to providers of housing such as this, and the lack of interest is reflective of A, they're on Bruny Island, B, there's only four of them, C, the rental return is very low. The fact that there's not a greater stock there, it's more of a hassle for these providers to be looking at this. If there was to be a provider in the future that had a vision for social housing on Bruny Island, I could see that changing, but at the moment it certainly there was a very I will say minimal interest received in terms of our engagement with social housing providers.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to ask if for future planning around this, it's I don't want to exactly ask for a master plan or anything like that, but I recall that the previous council agenda on this topic had like the site plans and things. There's a bit of land around it that council owns as well, isn't there? So a bit more than just the building envelope. The land is like, could there be a future master plan, say, to increase the stock there with the aim of ultimately getting it in the hands of housing providers? Like, does council play a role in expanding the degree of public housing on Bruny Island on that site?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. Council some years ago did receive a submission from a private developer that was interested in acquiring the units, and they did a master plan for the site that indicated you could fit an additional four units on it, and then there's some additional land adjoining this property that I think is owned by the health centre, or at least the state government, that could also potentially accommodate more units, bearing in mind that the waste disposal for the units needs to be contained within the property, so that does limit the development potential of the land for further unit development. I mean, in terms of would council do this, it's a decision for council in terms of whether it sees itself in this space and whether it sees itself becoming more active in this space, bearing in mind that the existing units were developed by the old Bruny Island Council. We've inherited them and continued to manage them ever since.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. To conclude my remarks, I think we do play a role. I think everybody would agree that there's a greater need for housing in general, but I think particularly public housing will be a very important contribution to the market. And also I think it probably does align very closely with our housing commitment to improve the diversity and the housing stock within Kingborough. So I think we do play a critical role, and it's pleasing to hear that even though it's a very small scale, the master plan going from four units to eight, I think it would align with our statement on housing, with our housing commitment, and it would also I think the residential vacancy rate on Bruny Island is sub 1%, as I recall. So it's a very serious matter to increase the number of available rentals on Bruny, particularly with an ageing population as well and with cost of living pressures and the like. I think this is it's a sandbox that we should be playing in, and so I think this is a really great start, and I'm pleased that we're doing this, but I certainly have a willingness from my individual perspective to do more with relation to public housing and to increase council's activity in that space. Thanks, Mayor.
Councillor Dean, and then Councillor Fox.
Look, just a clarifying question. The future plans, is because it's now vacant and looks like we're going to be upgrading it, is the plan to move the neighbours in and then look at the other one, or are we putting someone back in and then we'll just wait till the next person moves out?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, the intent of this resolution is that we would do the works and look to tenant it ASAP.
Councillor Dean.
Is that the based on the resolution from the 1st of September, or is that officers' preference?
It's just me.
Through you, Mayor, it's based on the resolution from Council previously and an understanding that the majority of councillors were in favour of seeing the tenant, the unit tenanted as quickly as possible.
Councillor Dean.
That notwithstanding, if council was of the view, as in officers were of the view, that the other facilities are as bad, if not worse, then isn't there some imperative that we make sure that the others, I mean, or at least have some kind of long-term plan here? I feel like we're just kind of doing a bit of a short-term fix, which is great, get someone back in there, but if the three others are, what is the long-term vision, I suppose, from an officer perspective?
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor, what we have been doing is upgrade units as they become vacant, and that's the situation we're in at the moment. We could look to upgrade a unit whilst it's tenanted, but we would need to find alternate accommodation for the tenant. And you know, if we get to the point where that is an absolute necessity, that's what we'll have to do. In terms of the future funding, it's a capital project that would need to be brought to council as part of our annual budget deliberations in relation to our capital budget.
Councillor Dean.
So just a last question, and just to clarify Councillor Cordova's questions at the beginning, the main reason that this wasn't taken over by CHP is because of the location rather than the state of the units and the fact that they probably all need at least $50,000 worth of repair and they'd be taking over pretty poor quality.
Mr. Smee.
Through me, that's correct. It wasn't to do with the condition of them. It's to do with their isolation and the number. They're just such a small number to manage on what is an isolated area. There's just not enough in it for a provider to take it on.
Councillor Fox.
Just that I became aware today that of a gentleman, an elderly gentleman, who is actually living in a caravan and has no ablutions on Bruny Island. And I'm wondering if that person is the one that we've got in mind to tenant, or whether there are other people in a similar position and that we know of. And it does worry me, looking at these pictures also, that there don't seem to be any handrails or grab rails around toilets, hand basins. There is one in the shower. But, you know, we're attracting elderly residents here and frail residents, and the standards for this type of dwelling have gone up. Legally, from a disability point of view as well, we need to make sure that it's done properly and not just on an ad hoc, she'll be right, mate, manner, as they are council responsibility. And I'm one, maybe that's a question. Is that what we're doing, or are we just doing the best we can with the money available?
It's just me.
Through you, Mayor, as indicated in the report, we've engaged a building surveyor to provide advice in relation to what is required under the National Construction Code, and that's what's been included in the scope of works to upgrade the unit to meet current code.
Councillor Fox, anything further?
If we were to attract a person who had a disability or was frail and aged, would we be prepared to modify the unit to suit their individual needs?
Oh, sorry, Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor, as I've indicated earlier, the legislation doesn't apply in retrospect. However, if we were to
If a unit was to become vacant, we would take the opportunity to upgrade it to meet all current standards.
And I do note on page 141 of the report, with the mention of the bathroom, it talks about ensuring all plumbing fixtures and handrails are DDA compliant. Anything further? No? Okay. Councillor Fox, you don't want to sum up? No? Okay, I'm going to put the recommendation. Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to page 145, financial report for September 2025, with the recommendation on page 147. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Moved, Councillor Bain, seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Financial report September 2025 looks to be a good news story, I think.
We just blew that.
Too soon, too soon.
There you go, David.
So the statutory fees and fines, $250,000 over budget, which is good in the development department. The user fees to date are $130,000 over budget, with $90,000 of this attributed directly to Kimber Sports Centre. So my first question here is, I guess whilst this is only 3 months worth of data, if that trend continued, you'd be looking at over $500,000 for the year in additional revenue. So my question is, are you being hesitant, I guess, because we're only 3 months in, or is there some known factors where we don't think we'll see this trend continue?
Oh, sorry. You can tell it's late, can't you, because my ability to concentrate now is so low. Mr. Spinks.
Through you, Mayor. Look, I'm not sure we'll end up $500,000 in front at the sports centre just through gym memberships. Perhaps Mr. Smee could help me out. But the centre manager has advised that whilst they're ahead of budget at the moment, they're a little bit reluctant just at this point to make a forecast adjustment. They would like to just sit on the results for another month or two and just sort of see how that trend goes. I suspect we will be making an adjustment, but I don't think it's going to be of that magnitude.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor.
And then Councillor Midgley, when you finished.
My second question was just around depreciation. I think one of our largest assets, the roads and bridges, was being revalued this financial year. So just interested to know if we have any indications yet whether the revaluation aligns with what we've budgeted for it.
Mr. Spinks.
Through you, Mayor. Yes. So we've been trying very, very hard to get the reval done promptly this year. You might recall that a couple of years ago we ran into the problem with the stormwater reval whereby council approved its budget in June 2023 and the reval results weren't in, and then subsequent to that they came in unfavourably. So that the process has been underway for the asset class or roads, which includes bridges, footpaths, curb and channel, so it's a big class. And our first pass review of the results was that it has come in around where we expected it might, or what would have been budgeted for. But in saying that, that was just our first pass. Our asset systems person has been away for several weeks, only came back last week, so we need to do some more work around that revaluation result. And we'll have a better result for you soon.
Councillor Bain.
Just one final question. When we passed the 25-26 budget, there was a condition in there for the CEO to find an element of savings. So with the final position we've got down the bottom, the forecast underlying loss, does that account for that savings occurring, or is it still yet to be added?
Mr. Spinks.
Yep, through you, Mayor. So the budgeted loss for the year of 2.5 is inclusive of finding $200,000 of savings, and the revised forecast for the year of just under $2.3 million now is also inclusive of or assumes that we'll find those $200,000 in savings.
Yep. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to make a comment about the sports centre, and I'm noting I am a member of the fitness centre there, and I think with those increased opening hours. It really has created a buzz and a bit of an excitement, so I can see why that extra revenue is there, and just want to really note how inclusive that place is for so many members of our community, and thank all the staff there as well for that. You know, they're at the forefront and the face of that place, so thanks to them. I just had a question regarding, there was a note about the engineering reviewing the budget presented, and they're going to, yeah, so the the engineering services are going to review the budget presented to council, and I'm just wondering a time frame for this, when that will come back to council regarding that review of the engineering budget.
Mr. Spinks.
Through you, Mayor. My understanding is that Mr. Mackey would like to present that report, and so I'm of the belief that next meeting that report will be coming forward. Yeah.
Anything further? I'm going to put the recommendation in. Moved by Councillor Bain, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Appendices? Well, there wasn't really any. There was, but I still need a mover and seconder. It was just the forward program, I think. So moved. Councillor Cordova, seconded Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Assuming there's no questions on the appendices then. That takes us, hooray, to page 203, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. In accordance with Regulation 17, Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025, Council by absolute majority moved into closed session to consider the following items. Confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, community hub, commercial space lease and rate rebate conservation covenant. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved, Councillor Midgley, seconded the Deputy Mayor. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Thank you all very much for being here, and particularly to our last members in the public gallery who have lasted the distance, the powerhouse from the Blackmans Bay Community Association. Thank you very much. Sorry, as individuals this evening. Thank you to everyone who was here tonight and for those who were watching along at home. In accordance, I'm going to start to lose my voice now. In accordance with the Kingborough Council meeting's audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. Open session of council adjourned at 9:07 p.m. So good evening and thank you for being with us.